right. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio 18, stories about beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 4. Coming up on the show, it'll be a Monday night into a Tuesday morning. We're going to be talking with Kevin Powell, our good buddy from WGN Sports, here to talk some sports. And he pops in. We have a great time talking with him. Mark Shapiro is from the Bureau of Internet Accessibility, and we're going to talk with him about the Bureau and what they're trying to do to help people with disabilities have internet accessibility. It's a pretty important thing. He's the president of the Bureau, and we're going to talk to him a little bit later on. There's a crazy story of a fake Burger King in Pittsburgh. Men who like cats are less likely to get a date. I guess that's true because I like cats. Much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for the Team Hochberg phone line. And right now, we want to welcome back to the show, Mary Malman and Javier Ramirez from Madison Street Books, which is at 1127 West Madison. You can go to madstreetbooks.com. We're seeing what's happening with their business as we open up more in Chicago. And here's Javier. Hi, Javier.
Hello. How are you? Thanks for having me.
And Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hey, nice to talk to you guys again.
Great to talk to you as well. First of all, let's see. Mary, tell us about Madison Street Books.
Madison Street Books is open for business, finally. As I think we talked about the last time, we're a general bookstore. We're located at 1127 West Madison in the West Loop. We have found over the last, I guess we last talked in March, so with the last 3.5 or so months, that it is a neighborhood of incredibly generous and kind and supportive people who have been cheerleaders for us throughout this entire time. You guys may recall that we opened on March 14th and then closed on March 16th.
Right.
And, March was quite a month.
Yeah, I bet.
But the neighborhood really rallied around us, and people started ordering from our website. Our store is in a building that has two residential apartments above us. Our neighbors on the top floor alerted their family all across the country, and they started ordering from us. We've had just a really terrific outpouring of support from people all over the city and all over the country, and especially all of our neighbors in the West Loop. It's been great.
I remember when we spoke in March, the support was already happening. Javier, and you've got to be happy with that.
Yeah, happy. And, you know, if there's a silver lining with the whole situation of being shut down for about 3 months, it's that we did get that added support locally and nationally, and the fact that people, I would say, Mary, probably like 30% of our online sales were from outside of Illinois, and it really sort of increased our brand. They would have never heard of Madison Street Books had this situation not arisen. So we're in the back of their heads when they go to order books next time.
I would imagine that since people have been stuck inside, that there's a lot more reading going on. Have you noticed that, Mary?
There really is. I think people have sort of, they're on one side of the camp or the other. They have found their way back to reading. They've grown tired after a certain point of, you know, binge television watching or gaming or being on their phones, and they've found their way back to reading on one level. I think there's also the reader, the individuals who were always readers, and during this time it was so unsettling that I think some people had trouble settling down to read. It's interesting. We found one extreme or the other. People were like, yes, I'm back to reading. And other people were like, I can't focus right now.
Yeah.
So it seemed to be one or the other, but definitely people are back to books.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, everybody's going to react differently, you know, to what's happening, you know, because there's no right way to react, you know, to what's happening now. But I'm glad to see that that things are now. Are you opening? Are you Javier? Are you fully opening up now?
Yes, we've been open for the last 2 weeks. I think this Saturday will be our third week having the doors open. You know, open it. We're being very safe. No more than 10 people at a time. We have gloves at the door. We wear masks. We have masks in store and hand sanitizer. Everyone's been really very courteous and respectful, giving space, and we couldn't be happier now. It's nice to have people in the store and be able to talk about books again.
Yeah, it's nice, and really the support that you're getting from that from your neighbors is really it's really great, and it's got to make you feel great. And again, it's Madison Street Books. They're at 1127 West Madison Street. You can check out madstreetbooks.com. And they're open for business. They are open for business. Okay, Javier and Mary, hang on. Javier and Mary are here from Madison Street Books. We're going to talk more with them about some of the reading habits and some of the books that that people are purchasing. And we'll talk more about that. But they're open for business. It was a tough. They opened, and 2 days later, they had to close. I mean, it was the timing couldn't have been worse. But they did curbside service. And more to get by, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as well. So 312-981-7200, it's the phone number for the Team Hochberg phone line if you would like to get in here to talk books. All right, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here till 4 o'clock. My guests right now are Mary Mullman and Javier Ramirez from Madison Street Books, and they're open for business. Well, not right now, at this moment, but they are open for business, and they've been they've opened up completely. And Javier, welcome, and Mary, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So when the store was closed down, you know, I mean, and again, we talked the last time we talked, it was you guys were open for 2 days and then you had to close down. That must have been nuts. I mean, it really must have it must have been heartbreaking, Mary.
You know, it really was. We worked so hard to pull the store together, and, you know, there's a combination of all of the physical build out of the space and pulling all of that together, and then, you know, you have to receive a lot of books to open a bookstore.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of time to do all of that and get them on the shelves and get it looking just the way you want it. And so we were so fired up to open up and be ready to, you know, launch into the neighborhood. And we did have we had scheduled probably a couple weeks in advance a grand opening party the night. So that day, the 14th, we did all sorts of different activities throughout the day, and then we had a big party scheduled for that night. And as the week leading up to that night progressed, our guest list was getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
You know, as people were taking more and more precautions. We still had a lovely evening and so generous and kind of everybody to come, but it did end up being a smaller event than originally intended. And, you know, needless to say, a couple of days later, the doors were closed.
Yeah. But you guys did make do, Javier, right? I mean, you did curbside stuff. You guys were still in the store.
Yeah. For just about every day we were in the store from the, you know, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Just, you know, we basically became a processing center. And it's kind of frustrating. I know bigger stores have gone through this as well, but our store is small enough that you can see the activity when you walk by the windows, and it was tough. You know, people would stand and look in our windows and at our displays and really want to come in, and it was frustrating to not have them see the gorgeous space with all these wonderful books.
And I
actually took one order from someone who literally stood outside the door, placed an order online, and I walked the book out to them And it was great that they did that, but it was just frustrating they couldn't come in and see the rest of the store and expand on their shopping. So.
Right. Well, I mean, tell us about the store, Mary. Tell us about, you know, like how big it is and you know.
So the store is about 1,500 square feet, and probably about 1,250 of those are sellable. You walk in the store, and it's a beautiful old building, and there's one really lovely exposed brick wall, and we've got these great pillars, these iron pillars that are basically holding up the building, and they go from the first floor all the way up to the third. So you've got these gorgeous columns, and the ceiling's really beautiful and high. And so it's a pretty space, I have to say, if I do say so myself. The space looks good. And all along our wall, our brick wall, when you walk in on the left, is a huge wall of fiction. And I'll let Javier explain the wall of fiction. So that side is all fiction, and then on the right-hand side of the store, there's a bit of a mezzanine level, and under the mezzanine level is all nonfiction. And then you proceed to the back of the store, and that's the kids section. And we have a great kids mural that was painted by a local artist who's also a book illustrator. Her name is Diana Sadika, and she did a great mural for us in the kids section. So it's really, I think, bright and cheerful and really appealing to kids. And I guess that's kind of it. Down the center, we've got some big tables with all of the new releases for fiction and nonfiction. And up in front is the checkout counter with booksellers who are just dying to answer all of your book-related questions.
Now, how many people work, Javier, how many people work there?
Mary and I, we have one bookseller, Wayne Giacalone, who had to stay home most of the time for the last 3 months. He's just back into the store the last couple of weeks, and it's nice to have him in the store. If I could just add one thing real quick to the layout of the store, Mary and I had conversations about how we wanted the store to be open and browsable, and I really think we did a great job of not giving you space to walk in, take a look at the space, and decide where you want to go. I think in hindsight, we didn't think it would work out as well as it did, but it's a beautiful and very browsable store. And we do, Mary mentioned the fiction section, we do a thing that we took a chance on, a couple things with the fiction section. We took all the short story collections and separated them out. So you walk in, that's the first thing you see, and then poetry, and then fiction along the rest of the wall, but we don't delineate. Horror, science fiction, and mystery are sitting right next to literary fiction, so we don't have any genre.
Oh, I see.
And I think it gives people a chance to shop out of their comfort zone. I think one of the first books that we sold was one of my favorite science fiction novels called Bad Monkeys by Matt Ruff. And I said that to a young woman who had picked it up based on, it was spaced out. And she didn't know it was science fiction. And she purchased it anyway, and I'm sure she enjoyed it. But we just love that feeling when somebody, when they really do shop outside of their comfort zones.
Yeah.
Or read outside of their comfort zones.
That's pretty cool. We have a caller here. It's Danielle on WGN. Hi, Danielle.
Oh, hey, Nick. How are you?
All right.
So my question was, I've been planning on opening, I'm 27. But I was always planning on opening up a bookstore, especially after this one in Palatine, a suburb, closed that I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious because I have everything planned. I have all the books and everything, you know, like that I've grown up, gaining. Like I invest all my money in books. And I just was wondering what advice you have for someone who wants to open it. Like I've already worked at Barnes & Noble. Like, I've seen how the bigger, ones work. I go to Half Price. I was just there today. But really, I'm more interested in, like, a small, independent, on my own type of store.
So you got any tips for her, Mary?
Well, I definitely think if you really want to learn the book business, it makes sense to work in a small, independent bookstore because the staff has the opportunity to kind of cross over into all different parts of the store and you know, you are a bookseller, but you're also probably likely to take on other projects. I think our employee, Wayne, he's like, okay, what did I get myself into? Because we give him all kinds of different projects to work on. And, you know, some of them are specifically related to selling books, but then others of them are, you know, how are we going to promote the store? What is, you know, what are best practices in the store? And I think the one thing that everybody always says, and I know I, you know, even can apply this to myself, it's a lot more work than it looks like. So I think that's probably my cautionary note. And, look, you know, going to work in a small bookstore will give you a really good exposure to all of that. So that would be my best piece of advice.
But there aren't any left around me. That I don't know. They all just keep closing. That's more, I mean, there's Anderson's in Naperville that I love, but I don't really consider that a small store. Did you consider
that's
that
probably
one?
True.
You know, like, that's one I go to all the time, you know, and I love them. But, like, all the ones that I grew up with are just, like, completely gone. And they've been gone for years. You know, it's not like they're just gone now. But I don't know. It's hard.
You know, when we first started opening, we started building out the store, and I talked to a few booksellers around the country. And the former general manager at the Milkweed bookstore in Minneapolis, Hans Wyand, been a longtime book guy. He's a legend in the industry. And, you know, he talked about a bunch of things, but the one thing that he said to me was, be weird. Do what you want to do. Like, we do this thing with fiction. We're selling vinyl. It was a good piece of advice I never really thought about. And it's your store. Do things that you want to do, and don't, you can break against the norms and see how your audience reacts to it. I think they'll react positively. You know, people want a different experience sometimes.
Yeah. I like that. I like that advice. Be weird.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said, and I just took it to heart.
Yeah. Hey, Danielle, hope that helps out. Good luck, okay?
Thanks, Nick.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Thank you.
All right. See you later. There you go. That's nice that people are, that there are younger people who are interested.
Yeah.
She's 27 years old, and she's interested in opening a bookstore. I love that.
That is great. That's amazing.
How has the internet affected book sales in the world? I mean, I'm sure it has had a pretty big effect, correct?
Go ahead, Mary. About a month and a half ago, I think, Amazon was not shipping books, and they were just doing necessary items, and it really helped us out a lot, especially locally. People wanted to buy local. And they were shopping local, not just with us, but everywhere, restaurants, supermarkets, markets, and there was that time, that window, for about a month and a half, that we gained a share, you know, and people realize that it's just as easy to go to a website. We have a really good website, by the way. It's very easy to maneuver. It's easy to search books. And people didn't realize how easy it was to just, it's just as easy to go to our website as it is to go to Amazon.
Yeah.
And, we send personal emails back for every book that's ordered. And I can't tell you how many times somebody emailed back and said, you know, Jeff Bezos is going to send that email to me. Thank you so much for getting back within, 20 minutes. And so there has been an effect, but I think lately, and we hear it a lot, people want to buy local. When we just thought about the store, and I was getting breakfast at a local restaurant, and I walked out, and there was a couple, and I talked to people, and I asked, I said, we're opening the bookstore. I just was so excited. And the woman turns to her partner and says, you were just complaining about not getting that Amazon book when it was supposed to come yesterday. And this is great. And I couldn't tell you if they went into the bookstore because it was a long time ago, but I think people want that experience now.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, hold on, okay?
Javier and Mary
from Madison Street Books are here. They're at 1127 West Madison Street. You can check out madstreetbooks.com, madstreetbooks.com. And they are open for business. There you go. We got more book stuff to talk about here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Our good friend Kevin Powell is going to join us to talk sports. That's coming up after midnight. And then a little bit later on, we are going to talk to Mark Shapiro, who is the president of the Bureau of Internet Accessibility. Right now, we are talking with Mary Malman and Javier Ramirez from Madison Street Books. The last time they were on with us, they had to be closed down due to the pandemic, and they were only open for 2 days, and they had to close down, but they made it. They survived, and they're open for business now, and you should go in and buy some books. And Javier and Mary, welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's see. What are you noticing, Mary? Is there a trend in are people buying certain kinds of books now, or at this time period? Is there anything that people are leaning towards?
I think when the shutdown first began, we noticed a lot of people interested in books on the Spanish flu and various influences worldwide in the past. And then we also noticed a lot of sort of fantasy or apocalyptic books focusing on some sort of a virus that's been let loose. There's one in particular that comes to mind called Station 11 that actually the book opens in Toronto, and then there's a virus that's let loose and you end up in an apocalyptic kind of situation, and the protagonists travel down and they come to Chicago, and then they go around the bottom of the lake and over into Michigan, and it's very sort of local, and that was sort of flying off the shelf. It's a really good read, and she has a new one out as well. And so those kinds of books were flying off the shelf, and then and there were people that were really interested in, digging into how things like this happened, digging into the plague, digging into stuff like that. And then there are people who were looking for things that were, really light and not going to be a really challenging read, because there were definitely people who were finding it, challenging to read.
Yeah.
Were looking for things you might consider to be like a beach read almost, because they just wanted something light.
I find it fascinating that people, during that time would start reading about plagues and things like that. And it was crazy, because I when this all started to happen, movies like Contagion and Outbreak Outbreak were being viewed like crazy. And I just, I went the opposite direction. I did not want to watch Contagion at this time. I wanted escapist stuff, but it's interesting to see how people would dive into that. Do you find that fascinating, Javier?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm one of those people. I didn't watch Contagion, but I do enjoy a good post-apocalyptic novel. For me, it's sort of escapism in a weird way. One of my favorite books this year was post-apocalyptic, sort of like The Road. It's called The Bear by Andrew Krivak. But there's a note of hope in it about how we're treating the planet, and, sort of a wake up moment with that book. So,
oh, okay. What are some of your favorite? Let's start with you, Mary. What are some of your favorite summer reads? Do you have books that like during the summer that you like to go to, or some of your favorite summer reads?
I do, actually. This time I'm a little better prepared on what I've been reading, and I've also been reading a little more. There's a woman whose name is Emma Straub, and she owns a wonderful bookstore in Brooklyn called Books Are Magic, and she's a great writer, and she has a new book out, came out, I don't know, maybe about a month and a half ago?
Okay.
Possibly 2 months, as Javier commented, it's all a bit of a blur. But it's called All Adults Here, and it's a family story told from a grandparent point of view. Her adult children are misbehaving, and as a result, her granddaughter comes to live with her, And in the process, it sort of comes to light that perhaps maybe the 12-year-old granddaughter is the sanest one in the bunch. So that was a really enjoyable read. And I'm currently reading a book called Pizza Girl by a woman named Jean Kayoun. And it's a story of an 18-year-old girl who's pregnant and delivers pizzas. And that's her, you know, source of income. And she meets a stay-at-home mom whose son is all about the pickle pizza. So their lives intertwine. And it's a great story that's humorous. It's kind of heartfelt. It's a really good story. So I'm enjoying that. And then the next suggestions I have, and I've read three of the four of them, and I think it's because I am worried that we might not be able to travel very much. So I have read two books that take place in India, and one is called A Burning, and it's by a woman whose name is Megha Majumdar, I believe.
Okay.
I'm pronouncing that correctly, I hope.
Okay.
And it's a story of a young woman who comments, she lives in India, in Bengal, India, and she comments on a Facebook post, and it's sort of an innocuous comment, but it's misperceived as being, she gets arrested, essentially. She's arrested for terrorism related to her comment. And so she's jailed, and it's all about how she works her way through this. And there's another woman who's a friend who has an alibi for her but doesn't want to get involved, et cetera, et cetera. So that, it's a great story. It unfolds. There's also a former teacher that she had been in contact. It's a really good story. And then the other one was recently recommended by one of our publishing reps, and it is called The Gin Patrol on the Purple Line. And
okay.
I first picked up the arc a while ago. Yeah, I picked it up because I was like, oh, The Purple Line, thinking it was, you know, a Chicago-based book.
Right.
And it isn't. It also takes place in India. And it's the story of a young boy, and he lives, I've forgotten where exactly. Anyway, he's homeless, and he's living on the streets, and he meets a girl, and they go off on these adventures. But in one way, it's kind of, they're having fun, but in another way, it's really heartbreaking. And the life that they're leading on the streets, and they're kind of on a quest, and I guess it's sort of a journey myth. I don't know. I loved it. It was great.
Yeah.
And then my last one, because the last time we spoke, I confessed my love of Jane Austen.
Yes.
So my last one takes place in England. It's called The Jane Austen Society by a woman named Natalie Jenner. And her premise is, what is going to happen to Chawton, which is the last home that Jane Austen actually lived in. It was owned by her brother, Edward. And so now her, like, great grand niece or somebody is, I guess that's the relationship. She's a niece several generations down, is living in the home, and what's going to happen to the home. And there's a group of people, and their lives intertwine in various ways. They all have a love of Austen in one way or the other. And, you know, there's the evil guy that wants to turn the home into and all the land into a golf course, et cetera, et cetera. So it's kind of a bit of a light read, but it's fun, and it's nice to think about what might have happened to Jane Austen's family home.
Oh,
so
that sounds
those are my suggestions.
Wow, you've been doing a lot of reading.
I know. I actually have caught up a little bit. I was not doing much reading before, but I have caught up a little bit.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Jeez. Javier, what you got anything that that you recommend that you've been reading that you like?
Oh, yeah. there are a few things. I want to talk about a couple of books that are from local authors. It's funny, a lot of these books are from the same publisher, which I didn't mean to happen. But Maurice Meyer she's a wonderful short story writer, and she's written a novel, but she has a new novel coming out on September 8th called The Seventh Mansion.
Okay.
And it's a little weird. She's a super talented writer who doesn't mind going over the edge. And this is a book, a coming-of-age novel about environmentalism and a little bit of necrophilia. She's just an evil genius in the best possible way. Another one by a local author, also from FSG, is called Pew, P-E-W, by Catherine Lacey. It's a book that I started and lost, so I'm trying to find another copy to read. I enjoyed thoroughly another weird novel that it's a little bit of a horror story, and I can't wait to get my hands on that. That comes out July 21st. She had a really great short story collection that came out and paperback recently called Certain American States.
Yeah.
Just two. We're lucky to have a lot of writers locally, but these two I'm very excited about.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of this book called Remain in Love by St. Martin's Press. From St. Martin's Press, it's a Talking Heads, the Tom Tom Club, and Tina by Chris France, who was
a funding
member of Talking Heads.
Sure.
And Tina Weymouth.
Yeah.
I love music memoirs, and this is such a good book. Like, I mean, there's so much that happens behind the scenes, and usually I read one of these books and I don't like the you know, where they grew up at, what their parents were like is sometimes not very interesting, but he can weave a really good story. And, you know, I'm barely through his adolescence and he tells some crazy stories.
Wow.
But it's really, really good. And I think it's going to be a big book. I love another book from FSG. It's a short story collection called I Hold the Wolf by the Ears. And I really love short stories. And
yeah.
Mary and I talk about this a lot. It's hard to get people, most customers, you have to sort of convince them how important the short story is. And it's by Laura Vandenberg. It comes out July 28th. And the first three stories in this collection are golden, and I'm waiting for that letdown. You know, that's most short story collections that are worth it. They're sort of come and go in waves, but she's nailing it. Just a couple more books, just two more books, if you don't mind. Parakeet, which I just finished this morning, by Marie Helene Bertino, also from FSG.
Yeah.
It is a weird novel about a nameless woman who is questioning her pending marriage, due in part mostly from a visit from her dead grandmother, who visits her in the form of a parakeet and sets her on this course really by defecating on her wedding dress, forcing her to start on this weird quest. She's an incredibly talented writer.
Okay, Javier, I got to take a break. So hang on, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the things that you're reading here. But we got to take a break here on 720 WGN. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Coming up after midnight, our good friend Kevin Powell is going to join us. Talk a little sports. That's coming up. And then after that, Mark Shapiro is going to join us. He's the president of the Bureau of Internet Accessibility. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Joining us now, Javier Ramirez and Mary Malman from Madison Street Books. They're located at 1127 West Madison Street. MadStreetBooks.com is the website. Mary, welcome back. And Javier, you were going to tell us about one more book.
One more book. It's from Tin House. It's The Book of Atlantis Black by Betsy Bonner. Comes out August 4th. On the first page, a young woman is found dead in a Tijuana hotel room, not matching her ID, and it sets her sister, Betsy, who is the author, on a quest to find out what happened to her sister, Landis Slack, who was in a band that didn't know this, an underground sort of punk band, who was on the verge of making it big. And you read the first page and you can't believe it's not a work of fiction. And if you... if you put it down after the first page, then something is seriously wrong with the reading. Like, you have to, you know, if you can't keep reading for the next 200 odd pages, something is missing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's about it.
All right.
One per day, so.
Mary, what are your hours, just so people know?
We are open Monday through Saturday from 10 in the morning until 8 in the evening. Depending on when you catch us on a Friday or Saturday night, we might be there a little later than 8, and we'd be delighted to see you. And then on Sundays, we open at 11, and I think during the summer, we're thinking we'll close around 6, and then possibly in the winter, we'll close on Sundays at 5.
Okay.
So just kind of going to play it by ear, depending on how busy things are in the neighborhood.
And how is the neighborhood, how's the community around you reacting to everything opening up? And obviously, you said that they were very supportive during the lockdown.
They really were. There are several restaurants that have great patio space. They're actually kind of restaurant bars near us, and they are out in their front space, you know, on the sidewalk with outdoor cafes, and then some of them have cafe space behind their restaurants as well. And so they have been seating people. I think that most of the restaurants will seat only 4 or 6 at a maximum at a table, and the tables are all spread far apart. I think they're not able to host as many people as they used to, but they're doing business outside, and it's definitely a walking neighborhood and tons of babies and tons of dogs. So
nice.
We see lots of babies and dogs in the store, which is great. And just a lot of people, a lot of foot traffic, a lot of people out and about. And I think people, you know, during the shutdown, that was sort of your only way to, you couldn't go to the gym, so you could get exercise by being outdoors. And I think people really counted on the fresh air. So they would walk by the store and wave all the time while we'd be in there, you know, packing up orders. And then now they're excited to come in, and it's been really great to put faces to all of the emails that we've been receiving and all of the orders we've been receiving. And as Javier was saying, there's, you know, so many people who've written personal notes, and it's really now really fun to have those people come in and actually meet them face to face.
That's really cool.
It really is.
Do you guys, like, Javier, do you guys communicate with other booksellers, and how are they doing? How are they holding up during this?
Yeah, you know, I was going to mention earlier, during the crisis and the lockdown, we received such amazing support from all of our independent bookseller brethren around the country. I want to thank them all for purchasing books when they had their own bookstores to purchase from, purchasing our T-shirts when our T-shirts came out, you know. A lot of stores had to close, cut staff, and like most, you know, stores are in varying sizes. And Mary mentioned Books Are Magic in Brooklyn. My good friend Nick Bazansky is the general manager there, and it's just having to not let people in and have, you know, do curbside pickup, but people trying to get into the store. I mean, it depends on where you're at, but for the most part, I think we're surviving as a group, but we support each other unequivocally. It's been tough all around. We're one of the lucky ones.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, that's great. It's nice to see that the community is closed like that. You know, one of the things that you said, Javier, that disappoints me is that you have to convince people to get into short stories.
Oh, it's the worst.
The last time we talked, because I love short stories. I mentioned George Saunders.
Yeah.
Who.
Favorite.
One of my favorite writers of all time, and he's an amazing short story writer. Mm-hmm. And people who would miss out on the kind of gems that this guy writes, are really missing out. You know,
It's amazing, especially with his novel that came out. What was it called?
Lincoln and the Bardo.
People aren't aware that he writes short stories. It took some convincing of a lot of customers to realize that it wasn't his first book. And then you try to turn them on to those gems, and it's kind of, they're a little, it's 50-50, you know?
Yeah.
Just as a suggestion, do yourself a favor and pick up Friday Black.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be able to pronounce the author's last name.
Okay.
Or full name, but it is, there are, I think he's out Saunders, and Saunders actually, he doesn't blur very much. he gave this book a really great blurb.
Oh, is that right?
And it's very timely. You'll notice when you start reading it, it's very timely.
Okay. All right. I like the suggestion. Mary Javier, thank you so much, and I'm glad that you're back in business. And madstreetbooks.com is the website. You can navigate the website there. They're located at 1127 West Madison Street, and it's Madison Street. But, well, of course you're on Madison Street because you're called Madison Street Books, which makes sense. But, yeah, real pleasure talking to you guys, and I'm glad that you're back in business.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for having us on.
It's my pleasure. Okay, there you go. There's Javier and Mary, Madison Street Books. Support your local book stores and, especially during this time. MadStreetBooks.com is the website. And read. That's all I'm saying. And support local things here. And Madison Street Books, MadStreetBooks.com. Get your books there. All right. We're going to break here in a couple of seconds here, and we're going to go to the news. And then after the news, Kevin Powell is going to join us. You can hear Kevin Powell doing the Sports on Rose show weekdays here on 720 WGN. And we are going to talk sports. There's more sports news out there. We're going to get to it, and Kevin's going to join us after we break for the news right here on 720 WGN. Hello. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories of a beautiful downtown Chicago. And we are going to talk about men who like cats, and they're likely less likely to get a date. we've got some classic Carson, Johnny Carson show. You can watch it every night on Antenna TV. And at 2:30 every morning, we always play some highlights from the Johnny Carson show. And sometimes it's stand-up, sometimes it's bits. This morning we're going to listen to Johnny Carson's Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. That's got greatness written all over it already. So, we also have the crazy story of a fake Burger King in Pittsburgh. So, that's all coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number from the Team Huckberg phone line. All right. Now, you heard Bill Withers, and you know what that means. That can only mean Kevin Powell. Kevin Powell here at WGN does sports on the Rokan show, covers sports, and joins us every once in a while to talk sports. Kevin, how you doing, buddy?
Nick, I don't own any cats. Does that help or hurt my chances at a date?
I think it probably helps. That would be okay. According to the article, according to the article that we are going to be discussing, I think, yeah. And I happen to be a cat guy, so that explains a lot.
I'll take all the help I can get, Nick. Thank you for having me. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Now, are you coming down to the studios to do the show, or?
Yeah. I've been at the station every day during this whole pandemic and everything. Shout out to our engineers who we've had to piece a lot of shows together, because Rose's been at home. Kim Gordon, who does news for the afternoons, has been home. Lauren was at home for a while, and one of the producers, Brian Altimer, was also at home. So they were kind of piecing it all together, and they wanted a body at the station just in case, because it was kind of a complete puzzle putting it together. But it for the most part, has gone off fairly well. So for me, I've been in every day, and we were constantly cleaning and wiping things down. So
yeah, but we do the same thing. We're here every night, and we do the same thing. The studio is completely wiped down before we get in here. There's hand sanitizer all over the place. And, we wear masks when we're in the hallways or in the lobby downstairs or any of that, all elevators, all of that stuff. You got to take the precautions. We're doing a show.
No, I know. You guys have been doing great. We've had a few people coming in that I hadn't seen in months that come in, whether it be sales or whatever it may be, just a couple people here and there, but it's still so much more quiet than it would be under normal circumstances.
Yeah.
It's been 3 months, and if, I don't know. It's, to me, Nick, it felt like one long day. That's the way I've described it. I mean, for me, I'm going in every day. I've had some sort of normalcy, but it still does. I don't know. People, what did I do last week? I don't know. Might have been a year ago. I can't even remember. It's
yeah.
just a weird feeling all around.
Well, I think everybody is feeling that. I think everybody is like, I don't even know what day it is. You know, and I think a lot of people are, you know, especially people who have been staying home. I mean, there is at least a wee bit of normalcy in the fact that, you know, we're coming in 5 nights a week to
right.
do the show. So there
right.
is just some sort of, you know, that's it, there is a little bit of normalcy in that. But
yeah,
I can
understand. The whole routine of getting ready and going to work, I think that helps for the normalcy part of it.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of people haven't been able to do that, so I think I would have lost my mind. I don't know how some people have done it, Nick.
Yeah.
So I've just been happy to be going in, but
yeah.
it's still surreal. I mean, I'll walk out of the station, you know, it's starting to pick up a little bit for sure, but there was a moment there where I walked out, you know, right on Wacker there, and I didn't see a single soul. It's like, you're the movie guy. It was like experience a pandemic movie. It really was. You really didn't see anybody for a while.
Oh yeah. 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 I've noticed though, now traffic is starting to pick up on the Kennedy. There seem to be more cars out now. And it's starting to pick up a little bit. I mean, as you know, we're slowly opening up the state and the city.
Yeah. You know. For someone who takes the Kennedy every day, I really hope this doesn't come out the wrong way, but I absolutely love the fact that I had the Kennedy to myself basically every day driving in. My commute was cut in half essentially.
It's funny because people are like, you know, like this is terrible, but boy, the traffic situation is good.
It really was.
Yeah.
It really was. Yeah. But normalcy will be good. We're inching closer, Nick. There was baseball news.
Yep, baseball news is there. Now, what have you been covering in the world of sports?
It's, you know, there's been news every day. It's been weird because I'm not doing my traditional previewing what's at night, who are the Sox playing, who are the Cubs playing. It's just basically been about return to play for all sports, and we've seen it a little bit. I mean, golf is back at it. It's week two. They did have one golfer test positive after having nobody test positive for a couple weeks. NASCAR, there were some storylines there, some soccer overseas, and now in baseball we got the news that the players have rejected the latest proposal from the owners, and which means at this point it's just going to be at the hands of Commissioner Rob Manfred, who now has, I don't want to say he's strictly, I mean, you know, commissioners in all sports always catch the most flack because they're out in center and the public sees them. But you have to keep in mind that commissioners for any pro sports league, they work for the owners.
Yeah.
That's who they work for.
Yeah.
So they are sort of a mouthpiece for the owners. And as much as people want to get upset with Rob Manfred over the whole situation, and I don't necessarily think he's handled it all that well. There has been some flaws in it, but everything he says, he's just relaying what the owners told him how
right.
they feel.
Right.
So,
well, listen, Kevin, hang on a second, okay? Kev?
Yeah, you got it.
Hold on. Kevin Powell is with us. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Major League Baseball story that's out there and the proposal and all of that and more. It's Kevin Powell. You can hear him on the Rokan Show every weekday afternoon here on 720 WGN, and he covers sports, and he joins us usually about once a month to talk sports with us right here on 720 WGN. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Coming up after 12:30, we'll be joined by Mark Shapiro, who's the president of the Bureau of Internet Accessibility. That's coming up. Right now, our good friend Kevin Powell is with us. You can hear him every weekday afternoon on the Rokan Show, covering the world of sports. Kevin is with us. Kevin, before the break, we were talking about the MLB owners failing to reach the deal and talking a little bit about Rob Manfred. So let's continue mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, so essentially what happened yesterday at this point was the owners had sent the latest proposal to the players that was rejected overwhelmingly, voted 33-5 against, which means at this point, considering it's basically been a volley of proposal after proposal and an endless amount of statements released by either the Players Association or the owners, it's going to be at the hands of Rob Manfred, who, what I was saying was, you know, he does essentially work for the owners. So
right.
It sounds like we're going to have a 60-game season, Nick, which is just, again, just so much to work out with this. And the beauty of baseball, in a way, is that it's a 162-game season. There's the ebb and flow of a season, right? And it does weed out the best teams. You play each other that much. At the end, the best teams are going to emerge. You know, the NFL is great in its own way because it's one day a week, which makes it so big. But every sports league is a little bit different, and that the marathon that is a major league season makes it what it is for so many different reasons. What a 60-game season is going to look like, Nick. I mean, it's going to feel like a playoff atmosphere for every game, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you have one bad week, you can be done for the year.
Yeah.
So, look, I don't know. I know everybody's, it's what we do in 2020, right? We pick sides, who is right, who is wrong. I think there's blame, probably a little bit of blame to go around. I'd probably point a few more fingers at the owners. You know, they won 60 games. The players wanted more games. Why? Because that meant more salary. For weeks, they bargained about prorated salaries, meaning, you know, they had agreed on this in March. If a player was set to make $10 million, the prorated salary, if it was cut in half and was an 81-game season, they're going to get paid $5 million. It's pretty simple math. And the owners backtracked on that and tried to do all sorts of different things. No, we're going to pay you 70% of that, and we're going to do a sliding scale, this, this, and that. So I get the players protecting their money. And look, they are, at the end of the day, the product of Major League Baseball. People watch for the players. If you don't have quality content playing the best in the world, it's not going to be a billion-dollar organization. I can see sides to all of it. The gist of it is where we stand now is that the players tonight, Tuesday night, Tuesday afternoon, by 4 o'clock our time, Chicago time, they want to know if the owners and Major League Baseball want to know if they agreed to have players start reporting their spring training. Well, I shouldn't say spring training. It's already in the summer here.
Right.
But to essentially to a makeshift spring training. So another camp, which would start roughly July 1st, and it would be at home team ballparks. They're not going to go to Arizona and Florida. And with a league year starting about July 23rd, 24th, whatever that weekend is, that Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
And then they play 60 games. They play to late September, and then there's a 10-team postseason. And there we go. That's our 2020 season.
That's so weird.
I know. I don't know what it's going to look like. I mean, think about it. Like, if 60-game baseball season, I mean, if the stakes are so high every single game, and things are going to be a little bit different because it is going to be a compact schedule, so you're going to have, instead of a 26-man roster, they're probably going to have a 30-man roster, and then what they're calling like a taxi club, which would essentially be like, you know, your fringe guys who are, you know, AAA, or we refer to them as 4A guys, who are kind of right in the middle between AAA and Major Leagues, and
right.
they're essentially ready to go, and they can pick off that club and pop them in if they need to. Because think about it. Like, okay, if let's say your star athlete, your star player rolls an ankle and has to miss a week during a normal, like, yeah, that stinks, but it's a week. It's 7 games. Okay, 7 games right now is more than 10% of the season. That would be equivalent to missing, like, 17 or 18 games of a season. So there's just so much to factor into it. Like, how do the pitchers handle this? How much time do they need to get ready, et cetera, et cetera? So there's – and that's the thing I've been telling people. Look, the easy part was coming to an agreement about at least laying down the guidelines for a season, at least laying down a schedule. Now you actually have to go out and execute and figure out how you're going to do it. And they've had this many problems just agreeing on a plan to hold the season. Now they actually have to go out and do it. They have to agree on the health protocols, restrictions, guidelines,
right,
all those
right,
sort of things.
Right.
Where, you know, every state's going to have different guidelines. I mean, Chicago's certainly not. You know, we're getting there. We're getting there slowly. But Mayor Lightfoot said today, or early yesterday, that no, she doesn't anticipate fans being in the stands. And, I mean, it's going to be different state by state. And how does MLB handle that? There's so much to work out. So I don't need to be gloom and doom. I just don't get the sense that the baseball world is jumping up and down over the fact that we're probably going to hear that the players do approve of the owners and Rob Manfred's guidelines later tonight. The players are going to prove, but I don't know, you're a baseball, do you feel this overwhelming sense of, like, excitement and joy?
No.
I don't know, I have a weird taste in my mouth about it, Nick.
Yeah, no, I don't feel it, and you know, I'm a huge baseball fan, but yeah, I mean, you know, the people that I've discussed it with as well are just like, you know, I guess we'll you know, we'll watch right. baseball. I don't know. It's just it's very strange in every way. But you know, let's see. Here is Mike on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Hey, I love your show.
Thank you.
You know, one thing you need to talk about is how the owners can dig in. And you know, have either one of you heard of BAM? BAM Tech. BAM Tech is the media and technology that was a company, and each team got $30 million from the sale of a portion of BAM Tech, $1.5 billion. It wasn't – here, let me say this. The $1.5 billion purchase was only a portion of it, but the owners in baseball got $30 million. And if you Google search it, you can read it. And so you got the ownership is sitting there with $30 million in their bank account. And I got to say this, the players are trying to get whatever they can. And, you know, that's where I believe BAMTech is some of the reason for the standoff. And one thing I got to say that'll make you chuckle and I'll get off. Jim Boughton is a friend of mine. He wrote that book, Ball Four. Wow. And Boughton made a comment. He says, you know what? The owners have been kind of screwing over the baseball players for 100 years. And the way I look at it, we owe at least 50 more years of giving it to the owners. And it's kind of funny how he worded that. So have a good night, guys.
All right, Mike. Take care.
Yeah, that's a great call from Mike. And look, I mean, I try to toe the line a little bit, and I try to be one-sided here. If I were to pick a side, I get where the players are coming from. I mean, look, 1994, we had a complete unit strike. And to his point, on top of that, I know $30 million is a lot of money. During all of this, Nick, and I'm not kidding, during all of this, Major League Baseball struck a deal with TBS and Turner Sports, a $1 billion deal, reportedly, but many credible media reporters reported on it, that around a $1 billion TV deal with TBS and Turner. So... And you know, look, Tom Regis came out with, you guys think we just have piles of cash? Yeah, I do think you guys have piles of cash. I really do. I mean, if you tell, okay, you tell. And look, I know it's not TBS handing them a $1 billion check, right? This is a lengthy, long-term deal, but like, you're going to be fine moving forward. You are. And as much as we can talk about, okay, sour taste in the mouth, I even have it a little bit. I'm not as excited as I thought I might be when I found out baseball could be returning. But, like, people say, oh, I'm never watching baseball. Yeah, you are. Baseball is good. Baseball's been around for 150 years in this country. It's survived everything. Yeah. It's going to come back. It'll be fine. It'll have eyeballs. And once it does come back, the disappointing thing is, like, they had a good opportunity to get baseball on TV as soon as possible. Like, during the day, Nick, when a lot of generations were won over by baseball, I mean, it wasn't, you know, you talk to a lot of people, you go out at noon, in a weekday, the game is on TV, kids will be watching. That's a golden opportunity. It's not a 7 o'clock game where, yes, it's prime time, but, like, you had a chance, all the kids are at home, all the families are at home. If there was a baseball game on tomorrow at noon, Nick, I don't care who's playing, every single one of us would be watching.
I agree with you. I know I would.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We there's a missed opportunity there. And that's one of the reasons it kind of stinks all around. Yeah.
Here's Donna. Donna, go ahead.
Hi. The question I have is, it doesn't appear that COVID has entered into any of the negotiations or talks. What happens if a player gets sick or tests positive? Are the other players going to be quarantined for 14 days? How is that going to impact on the playing schedule?
These are things that they're going to have. This is what we talked about, Kevin. These are things that are going to have to be discussed. It's a complicated issue.
Extremely complicated. It's a great question, Donna. All the leagues are working out. I mean, if you look at the NBA's return to play, they're stationing the entire basketball league at Disney World. like I'm saying, you can agree on anything to get back to play, but we just don't know with this virus, and there's a million things to sort out. So I apologize for not knowing exactly what's in the return to play, and we still don't know for sure, but every league's a little different. I think the NBA, if somebody does test positive, they've got to self-quarantine and all those sorts of things, lot to work out.
All right. Donna, complicated, but thank you for the call. Hey, by the way, before we get out of here, if Marian Hossa is not a first ballot Hall of Famer on Wednesday, I'm going to punch somebody.
Thank you for putting my on my radar. I did not even know we were anticipating that Wednesday. Are they announcing the...
Wednesday at 3:30. The inductees are being announced Wednesday at 3:30 Central Time.
But he's technically not even... When do we have to wait? Isn't there a grace period? Isn't he technically still on the books?
Technically he is, but you know, I mean, he hasn't played for like three seasons, so...
Yeah, I got to take a look into that. But I agree with you. Whenever he does become eligible, if it is Wednesday or down the road, I'm with you.
Oh, first ballot Hall of Famer. There's just no question about it. He racked up 1,134 points in 1,300 games across 19 seasons with five different clubs. He scored at least 30 goals in eight of those seasons, 40 goals three times. Was the 80th player in league history to hit the 1,000-point mark. He's the only player in NHL history to reach the Stanley Cup final in three consecutive seasons with three different teams. I mean,
I got to look into it. I don't know if he's eligible just yet, but whenever he is, and I always mix up the pro leagues, many years they need before they name him eligible. With you. Hossa was awesome, man. He was a huge piece to that whole thing.
My favorite Hawk, man. I loved it. So
there we go.
All right, Kevin.
Nick, thanks for having me, my
thanks,
man.
Thanks, buddy. Stay safe, buddy.
All right, you too.
Okay,
thanks, Nick.
See you, buddy. Kevin Powell, Talk Sports on the Rokan Show, afternoons here on 720 WGN. Okay, we'll break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Mark Shapiro, who's the president of the Bureau of Internet Accessibility. All right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. We're here, really a great bureau here. It's the Bureau of Internet Accessibility. Everybody should have access to the internet, whether they have disabilities or are blind. People should have access to the internet. And the Bureau of Internet Accessibility is BOIA.org. Mark Shapiro is the president of the Bureau of Internet Accessibility. You want to learn all about the Bureau and about his role there, too. Mark, how are you?
Great. How you doing?
Pretty good. Tell me about the Bureau.
Sure. So the Bureau of Internet Accessibility is a company that helps organizations make their website and mobile applications accessible to everyone, including people with visual, auditory, and mobility challenges. Over the past 20 years, we've helped around 60,000 organizations.
Wow. That's amazing. Wow, 20 years. You've been around for 20 years.
20 years, yeah.
Wow. Has the internet been around for 20 years?
Yeah, the internet's been around since the early 90s.
And so you started back in 1992?
Actually, I started my original company in 93. That was a company that was focused on web development, and we got into e-commerce development.
Tell me a little bit what it was like to be working, with the web in 1993, and what it's like compared to how it is today.
It was interesting because back when the web started, it was fully accessible, and it was the great equalizer because everybody could get to the content that they needed to get to. From a sales perspective, it was difficult because a lot of people didn't believe that the internet was for real and the businesses shouldn't be on there. So trying to convince people about how important the internet can be for their business and how they can get their message out and how they can have a one-to-one relationship with their customers, trying to get that message through to people, took a few years to get through.
No, okay. Wow, that's fascinating. I just can't. It's hard for me to even imagine what the internet was like back then. I didn't get hooked up to the internet till the late 90s.
Back then, it was essentially text-based, so everything actually was very accessible. Everybody could get to the same content. There actually wasn't much in the way of imagery. It was really a text-based system.
And so, how did you get involved in this work right here?
So my original company, BX.com, we focused on government agencies in the early to mid-90s, and then we started to work in more businesses. And in the late 90s, some new laws came along concerning website accessibility, and our clients were looking to us to help them have some resources to find out if they were compliant. None existed, so we developed some web-based tools. And the suite of tools didn't really fit into our business model. So I originally started the Bureau of Internet Accessibility as a nonprofit, and I provided all these tools for free. Then after I sold BX.com, I decided to focus full-time on the Bureau, and I changed it to a for-profit and added some consulting services.
Oh, okay. All right. And how many people work with you?
Our total team is about 150 people.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a good-sized team.
Yeah, that's a good-sized team. How long did it take to expand to that?
It's taken 20 years.
Yeah. Okay, the whole 20 years. And it's
yeah, it's been a slow and steady growth over the past 20 years. It's been great. Great group of people.
That's great.
We're fortunate enough to work with people with a diverse background in terms of ability, and it's an amazing team.
Talk a little bit about the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Well, the original Americans with Disability Act, it's actually, we're coming up on the 30th anniversary. The original focus was all about the physical world. It really didn't have anything to do with the digital world because the digital world was too new. So the Americans with Disability Act was making sure that everybody has access to all public locations. So, for example, to a public building, somebody in a wheelchair couldn't get up the stairs, so they required ramps. They required curb cutouts so that people could use walkways. They required that bathroom stalls were large enough to accommodate wheelchairs. And then the last few years, they added things such as closed caption options to people in a movie theater who may not be able to hear what's on the screen so that they could actually be able to follow along and read what's going on the screen.
Right. Oh, okay. Those are great services. So now tell me about the Chicago itself. How does Chicago stand up in terms of providing help to those who need it or accessibility?
You know, Chicago is on par with most of the other major cities. Definitely some areas of improvement. Where I saw Chicago lacking was more on the public school, the K through 12 side. There were some major accessibility issues, such as the color contrast issues, where somebody would have critical text that was light with a light background. Mm. So if you're colorblind, you couldn't see it. So issues like that, or some people can't use a mouse, they can only use a keyboard. So websites need to be keyboard accessible. Most of them weren't keyboard accessible.
Oh, I see.
And then also, most of them didn't have an accessibility page. Every website should have a page where it's dedicated to information about who to contact if you have any issues. And that page should be linked on the footer of every page of the website. So if somebody is experiencing an issue, they can click on it, find out who to contact, and contact that person.
Now, how do you police this? How do you make sure that things are getting done?
Well, unfortunately, it's policed primarily through lawyers. There's probably 1,000 to 2,000 demand letters and lawsuits happening every month. So the lawyers are really pushing this through right now.
Wow.
They're making everybody aware. And what's scary about that is the cost to defend these. For a small organization, it may be $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. For a large organization like a Domino's or a Harvard University or Target, they spent millions of dollars defending a lawsuit. So it's quite a bit of a legal expense and a time expense to try to fight one of these lawsuits.
So in order to help people with disabilities get into the digital platforms, what's the first steps that you take?
Well, you need to make sure that your digital platform is accessible. So you need to test it. And you can test it. There's a set of guidelines called the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, and it's been accepted as the international standard for what to test on websites. And what they did is they have 50 checkpoints, and their 50 checkpoints are organized by four different categories.
And what are those categories?
The first category is how is your website perceived? Can somebody, if there's an image, is there alternate text describing the image? Mm. And that has quite a number of checkpoints. Second one is it operable? Can I maneuver through that website? such as, is it keyboard accessible? Next one is it understandable? Does it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
There's if you're entering a field and there's an error message, does the error message make sense? So if somebody's asking me to input my name and I can't read the label next to it, if there's an error, it should say, hey, you didn't put in your name correctly. Please put it in correctly. A lot of websites just will say error, so the user doesn't necessarily know what to do.
Oh, I see.
And then the last group of checkpoints is making sure technology is constantly changing, so the website needs to move with those changes. So it needs to be robust enough to be upward compatible.
Okay. All right. The Bureau of Internet Accessibility is www.boia.org. Mark Shapiro is my guest. He's the president of the Bureau of Internet Accessibility and has been helping people out to get internet accessibility. Now, I'm looking at the numbers here. We have about 1 million Chicagoans who have a reported disability, but we still have a pretty long way to go to get everybody on.
We really do. Most of the websites have issues ranging from inconvenience issues where it's just a challenge to use to websites that are completely unusable.
Really?
So it is still a major challenge. Even after all, you know, after 20 years of being in this, we have seen improvements over the past probably 3-4 years, but now with COVID, it's really shining a strong light on how important it is to make everything accessible, because everything's shifting from the physical world to the digital now.
Right.
And, you know, you have to compensate for that.
Okay. Mark, hold on, okay?
Sure.
All right. Mark Shapiro is with us. He is the president of the Bureau of Internet Accessibility, and we're talking about internet accessibility for everyone, people who have disabilities as well. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number on the Team Hochberg phone line, and we'll talk more with Mark right after this. Hello, Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here till 4 a.m. Mark Shapiro is my guest. He's the president of the Bureau of Internet Accessibility, and it's an organization, a bureau that wants to make sure that everybody can get on the internet with disabilities or not. Mark is with us. Mark, welcome back.
Thanks.
In order to get platforms, digital platforms that are accessible, it's not just for those for the people with the disabilities, but it also is good for business. Correct?
Oh, absolutely. An accessible website is also accessible to Google to spider your site and make it rank higher in the search engine. So there's a lot of benefits. It's also the our population is getting older, and for somebody that's older, most of these adaptations are critical for them to use a website. So if you want to be able to sell your services or products to people who are older, people who might have different levels of challenges, you want to make sure that everything is accessible.
So, specifically, though, how do we make, like, for instance, how do we make websites accessible for, like, the visually impaired? How does that work?
Well, if you have imagery, you need to add the text behind the imagery. So, for example, if you have a store that says, in order to enter our store, you need the following, and you have a picture of a mask and gloves. If you don't describe that on the backside, on the alternate text, then the person who can't see the image is just going to hear the file name. So you need to say, hey, in order to enter our store, you need to wear gloves and a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it becomes critical. Or if you're, say, a bank, or you say you have a store that has a special, and you have a, hey, use this code and get 30% off. If you don't describe that on the backside of that image, then those people can't take advantage of that, and that's, in fact, discriminating against those people. So that does cause major issues, not just morally, but there's also a legal obligation.
Yeah, that sounds right. Now, so what can people do to improve this, like to accommodate people better?
You know, most of it's about taking into account and thinking how people are going to be receiving this information. If you use imagery, think of ways to provide the same information in text for people who can't view it. If you use text over images, make sure you have enough contrast so that someone who's colorblind will be able to read it. In general, if there's something that's displayed visually, explain it so that everyone gets the same information. And if there's something that's heard, make it also appear visually. So essentially, supplement the spoken with the visual and the visual with the spoken.
I see. Now, how do big tech companies like Facebook and Google, how are they ranking and meeting these standards?
They're actually, especially over the last couple of years, they're doing a really good job. They do have some issues, but they are addressing the issues as they come up. Target, who was actually sued, they spent upwards of $9, $10 million between legal fees and fines back probably 10 years ago. They have a whole department now dedicated towards accessibility, and they're doing everything they can to make sure that everything is as accessible as possible to everybody, both on their mobile applications and on their website.
What were they sued for?
They were sued because their website wasn't accessible. Mm. Somebody couldn't have the same experience as another person. So somebody who was blind couldn't get to the information the same way that somebody who's sighted could get to.
In the current world that we're in right now with COVID, how has that impacted digital accessibility?
Well, due to COVID, much of the activity that people would normally conduct in the physical world has shifted to the digital world.
Right.
So, you know, over the past 30 years, such great accommodations have been made in the physical world, but now the same level of thought needs to go into the digital world. So people need to make their digital platforms accessible, and they need to think of it that way.
Do you see that happening? Is that trending?
It's starting to trend, definitely being motivated by the lawyers and by the school departments. The Department of Education is starting to also get involved. The ADA, the Department of Justice, is getting involved. So there's definitely quite a bit of motivation on that side. And then on the social media side, we're definitely seeing a big push as well.
If someone wants to get involved, how can they, if they just want to help out and get involved and make things a little bit more accessible for people?
You know, to start with, if they run into an issue, contact the company and tell the company what the issue was and tell them how it impacted. You know, what was the impact? What were you trying to accomplish and what couldn't you do? And that will help just identify it. A lot of companies it's not really on their radar. So some of them aren't really aware of the issues.
Yeah. How do they get more aware? Because of organizations like yourself?
Absolutely. Organizations such as us, National Federation of the Blind, there's quite a number of organizations doing a major push to get the information out there about how critical this is and how it's really discriminatory to not do this. And companies and most organizations do not want to be known as an organization that discriminates against any group.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what other things does your organization do? If you want to get into more of the other things that you do outside of this,
sure. Well, our primary focus is testing website and applications using assistive technology such as a screen reader and identifying issues for companies and then working with them to help remediate those issues. On our website, we also have some training videos and different types of reports and a ton of free information on how to test your website and what to do.
That sounds great. And so anybody can just have access to it, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. And the website is boia.org. And
yes.
Are there new things happening every day with the Bureau?
There are improvements and new clients that are being added to our group all the time. Yeah.
Wow, that's great. That's really, really great. And you've been around for, and the organization has been around for how long again?
20 years.
20 years and helping people out to get to accessibility. You know, have you gotten feedback from folks that you've helped out, people who have disabilities who are now able to have access?
We actually have, and it's really, it's refreshing to be in business and help people. It's nice to be on the side that you're not just, you know, actively trying to make money, you're actually trying to make things better for people.
Yeah.
We are actually hearing from people. We heard from a student, we're working on a university website. Students were forced to take exams that weren't accessible. So So they would take the exam, but they weren't able to get to the information, so they would fail the exam.
Oh, wow.
Not only would they fail the exam, but they couldn't get their money back because they had completed the course. So it created all sorts of issues. So we were able to work to get things fixed up enough so that they could actually get to the information and be at the same level as everybody else and not be discriminated against.
How can people with disabilities get help with using tech?
There are some great resources. There's a lot of free software out there. There's a product called NVDA that's a free screen reader. There's quite a bit of tech built into the phones. So if you use an Apple or an Android phone, there's a good amount of information that's built into that. There's in the browsers, there's quite a bit of free applications. So the tech right now is quite good.
Wow. Okay. It sounds like you guys are doing a good job. What's next for you, Mark?
What's next for us is just getting the word out and trying to get everybody on the same level where all applications are accessible to everybody.
Mm-hmm. But, okay. Well, listen, I appreciate what you do, Mark, and I thank you for talking to us. You're the president of the Bureau of Internet Accessibility, and everybody can check out the website, and it's www.boia.org. Everybody should have accessibility to the Internet, and everybody. So it's important. Mark, I appreciate what you do, and thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Okay,
appreciate it.
Take care. Mark Shapiro, president of the Bureau of Internet Accessibility, helping people with disabilities and others get on the Internet and get some, and be accessible in the digital platforms in that world. So it's BOIA.org. And we thank Mark for joining us. It's right here on 720 WGN. Right. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 4, and we're going to talk about the crazy story of a fake Burger King in Pittsburgh. That's coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for the Team Hochberg phone line. And speaking of the Team Hochberg phone line, Howard wants to jump in here for a second. Hi, Howard.
Hey, Nick. Well, first of all, on the new discussion, cats are better than people, so it's easy to choose cats first.
Okay.
But that's not saying much for cats, because being better than people really doesn't take a whole lot. Now, a bit tongue-in-cheek. The last thing we were talking about, accessibility, I'm a person who's blind, and I've been messing around the Internet since, I guess, like that guy about 1993. Every Windows computer has software into it under the Ease of Access Center for low vision, mobility, people who can't use a mouse, one-hand operation. And there's a screen reader called Narrator.
Did we lose Howard?
Yeah, I think so. I think he might have dropped out there.
We lost Howard.
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, he was telling us about some of the software we were talking about earlier. But Howard's blind, and like he said, he's been on the Internet for forever, which is great. So, so here's the headline of this story: Men who like cats are less likely to get a date. New study finds. This is from CNN. So you must trust it because James Earl Jones says so. Is he still the voice of CNN? James Earl Jones? So here's the story. We have catastrophic news for animal lovers. Men who like cats are less likely to get a date. That's the takeaway from a study by Colorado State University, which found that women are less likely to swipe right or say yes to men if they're posing with a cat in a picture. Scientists showed hundreds of women photos of two men, both men pictured with and without a furry companion. Their responses showed that the men's luck got noticeably worse when women saw the picture with a cat. Men holding cats were viewed as less masculine, more neurotic, agreeable and open, and less dateable. the authors said. When shown the cat-free picture of one of the subjects, 38% of women said they were likely or very likely to casually date him, while 37% said they would consider a serious relationship with him. But a picture of the same man holding a cat gave the respondents pause, for thought, and they spelled it P-A-W-S in the article here, because it's funny. Those numbers dropped to 33% for each category. Meanwhile, the proportion of women saying they'd never consider getting involved with him rose from 9% to 14%. By comparison, positive ratings for the second subject did not decline significantly when he was pictured with a cat, but women were more likely to rule him out as a potential partner. When he was pictured alone, 40% of respondents said they'd be unlikely or certain not to date him casually, but this rose to 45% when he was joined by a cat. Similarly, 41% said that they'd be unlikely to consider him for a relationship, but 45% of the same said went up to 45% when they saw him with the pet. A total of 708 women aged between 18 and 24 were surveyed in the online experiment. The findings are likely the result of the long-held cultural stereotypes of cat and dog owners. It's important to note that these findings were influenced by whether the female viewer self-identified as a dog or a cat person, suggesting that American culture has distinguished cat men as less masculine, perhaps creating a cultural preference for dog men among most heterosexual women in the studied age group. Okay. Women prefer men with good genes, often defined as more masculine traits, they added, citing previous research. Clearly, the presence of a cat diminishes that perception. Why? A different study last year found that the crazy cat lady stereotype is not supported by evidence. Cat owners did not differ from others on self-reported symptoms of depression, anxiety, or their experiences in close relationships, the study said. Our findings, therefore, do not fit with the notion of cat owners as more depressed, anxious, or alone. I love the crazy cat lady on The Simpsons.
That's what I used to call my sister, Rhoda.
The crazy cat lady?
I used to call her the crazy cat lady. She had a lot of cats for a minute.
It's funny every time on The Simpsons. That character just kills me. It's so funny. So I'm a cat person. I take offense.
You're offended?
Yeah. I don't have a cat now.
Well, then you should be. CNN, if CNN says that you can't get a date now, or you can't get a date with a cat, maybe you can get a date now, you know?
Well, I don't want a date.
Well, you picked the wrong time to not have a cat, yeah. You know?
Well, but I've been a cat person, you know, nothing against dogs, but sure. I'm a cat person. Always have been.
What is it about cats, would you say?
I just think they're cool.
They're cool for cats.
I think they're cool. They're independent. They have a great attitude. Like, just get out of my face. Just feed me and change my litter box and shut up. And I like that about cats. But they can also be loving. A lot of people, you know, think, no, cats are dismissive and cold. And sometimes they are, and sometimes they're not. I like them. And there's also less responsibility when you own a cat.
Oh, my God, yeah. that is kind of the best part. You don't have to take them for a walk.
Yeah.
They just kind of do whatever. They do cat things. They chase, you know, fake mice or real mice, you know, if you've got real mice in your house. And it's really nice to know that I can leave my house for like 8 hours. Saturday, I was gone, me and Lauren out of our house, 8 hours, left the cat alone, you know, made sure to fill up the food for him, gone,
yeah.
8 hours, came back, He was just psyched to see us. He was just like, yeah, I've been hanging out.
That's cats, man.
That's cats, man. Yeah. Although mine likes to sit on my head.
Some cats do that. I know my mom's cat does that. My parents had to put down a cat a few months ago. Put down one of their cats. And so the one that's left, they were brothers. And the one that's left spends a lot of time like looking for the other cat. It's really sad.
Cats are like that, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, listen, are you a cat person or a dog person? I love this question. Did you ever have a date or a relationship with someone who had a terrible pet? That's a good one. Did you ever get a relationship or date somebody with a really terrible pet? Or if you've ever had weird pets? 312-981-7200 on the Team Hochberg phone line. Weird pets, do you ever date somebody with a terrible pet, and more. Whoa. What's this? Who's doing this?
It's a band called Will to Power.
Will to Power? Covered I'm Not in Love?
Yeah.
By 10cc?
Yes.
Okay. Didn't they have a hit, Will to Power? Like their own hit?
I'll have to do a little half-assed internet research.
I think so. Okay. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hey, you ever date somebody with a weird pet? Do you have an exotic or strange pet? Are you a cat person or a dog person? We're talking pets. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. So you said you had hermit crabs?
Yeah, hermit crabs, man.
How did that happen?
How did that happen? So both my parents, I think more specifically my mom, she's allergic to animals, like every animal. But mainly dogs and cats. Can't have dogs and cats around her. Nothing deathly. She's not going to break out in, you know, hives or anything like that. She's not going to go into anaphylactic shock. But she gets really itchy, all that kind of crap.
Yeah.
So we never were able to have any sort of pets growing up, except for fish, because you can't be allergic to fish, really. They don't have dander or hair. And my dad thought, it'd be a good idea that by extension, if, you know, we could have kind of sea critters as pets, well, why not get the boys some hermit crabs? They were all the rage. And so
they were?
Yeah, for a minute. For a minute, they were considered really cool pets.
Okay.
So he comes home one day with a little terrarium sort of thing and three hermit crabs, all with painted shells and everything like that. And you're kind of like, what's up with this? Why did you get us these little crustaceans?
How many?
Three of them. So one for each of my...
Oh, one
me,
for each.
Me and my okay. other two brothers. My All two right. brothers.
Yep.
And they were cool, I guess, until the whole thing started to stink to high heaven. Because hermit crabs are really smelly.
Ah.
And they're not fun, really. You want to maybe put them in your hand or something. And you think, oh, yeah, they're going to crawl on my hand and stuff. No, they usually just go back in their shell and just hang out.
That sounds fascinating. How long did they live?
God, I'll be honest, not very long. We were not great hermit crab owners. You're not great at that. So we just inside of at least maybe a month or two, just a bunch of dead hermit crabs sitting in a terrarium. We there were no tears shed, I'll say.
Did you name them?
Oh, I think mine was named Bob.
Bob the Hermit Crab? Poor Bob. Yeah, hermit crabs. I never had a hermit crab. I never had any weird pets. You know, just your traditional stuff. We've had, you know, when I was growing up, we had a few dogs over the years. A couple of cats. And I had a couple of cats when I lived in Andersonville. I had a couple of cats. Then when I moved in with my ex-wife, I had to get rid of my cats because she had Mr. Ruffle, and he would have killed my cats. So I gave them a nice home. You know, they ended up in a nice home. I was sad to get rid of them, Jackass and Bangs. You know, but Ruffle would have killed them. He would have eaten them.
That's Coconut Head, right?
Coconut Head, yeah. The nut.
The nut.
Biggest cat I've ever seen in my life. The first time I saw the cat, I was like, what is this?
Roughly how big in terms of weight?
20 pounds. I mean, he was fat.
He was an
enormous cat.
As the kids call today, thick.
Yeah. Yeah, and he did not like me when I first started dating my ex. Did not like me. Attacked me at one point. But then eventually we got along. And we liked each other very much. But yeah, we're talking weird pets. You ever have an exotic pet? You ever date somebody with a terrible pet? Here is John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hi, Nick. I had a girlfriend, a little blonde girlfriend, and we went up to her room to make out one night. And she had a Pomeranian dog, and she put it downstairs, and that dog followed us upstairs and started pounding the door repeatedly to get in.
Pounding on the door.
Yeah, it wanted attention. And it was up there with her master and wanted in.
Yeah.
Wanted that's
going to happen sometimes. I know.
Okay, I got some cat stories. My dad was a veterinarian, and we had three Yorkshire dogs and a cat. And we had a little mama Yorkshire terrier, and we had an orange tomcat. And the little Yorkshire dog attacked the mama cat. We grabbed it by the ears and, like, would make it squeal. And my dad would say, "Sister, be good to brother."
Okay.
And then another time we had we got this guy that was a newspaper reporter in another town had a Yorkshire dog. And he had it with a Chihuahua, and he couldn't keep them both because they were fighting all the time. So he brought this Yorkshire into my dad's office and gave it to us, and that made three Yorkshire dogs. Well, anyway, one day my dad was visiting with another man, and the Yorkshire terrier and my cat got in a fight, and they were like in a ball, and they were like rolling from one side of the room to the other. Like a wheel in a fight, you know. And I said to my dad, I said, "I think they're getting carried away." And my dad's friend was watching this, and it was just like a cartoon, like Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
Where a dog and a cat were like the dog and the cat were grabbed. One had a hold of the other's tail, and the other one had the hold of the other's head. And they were like in a wheel, and they were like rolling across the floor of this room, you know.
Yeah.
And I said to my dad, I said, "Don't you think they're getting really carried away?" And he goes, "Nah." He said, "They're just having fun."
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, there you go. They're just having fun rolling around on the floor. All right, John. Thanks for the call. Here is Steve on WGN. Hey, Steve.
Hey, I had a friend that he dated this girl for a couple years, and she had a pygmy hedgehog.
A pygmy hedgehog.
Yeah, it was no bigger than a tennis ball, but it was a hedgehog. And she even had a little like pen for it, like for when I'd come over for cookouts and stuff. She'd bring it outside so it could sun itself and eat some grass. And I don't even remember its name now. But, yeah, she thought it was a neat little pet.
Uh-huh. Okay. A pygmy hedgehog.
Honest to goodness.
All right. All right. Okay. All right. Thanks, Steve.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Was his name Sonic?
Lazy. That'd be lazy if it was called Sonic.
Sonic.
Or Hedgy.
Yeah. Pygmy Hedgehog.
Pygmy Hedgehog. I mean, I feel like hedgehogs are small enough, aren't they? Pretty small animals.
They are small, yeah. They are small. Wonder how long they live.
I don't know. But I know they're one of the difficult things about hedgehogs is that they're nocturnal.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. I have a friend who had a hedgehog for a while, and she said that anytime she would go to bed, it would just start like running around the cage like a madman. Like Sonic. Just
wow.
Yeah. Unlike cats, which are there's a specific name for it, but cats, as far as I know, are naturally this type of nocturnal, where they're most awake at like at dawn and at dusk, at the very beginning of the day and at the very end.
That was not the case of my parents' cats.
No, what was their deal? What was their sleep?
They would go nuts at night.
Just run around.
I would crash over at my parents' house every once in a while and sleep on the couch.
Yeah, sure.
And it was like as soon as I turned the lights off or something, or turned the TV off, tried to get some sleep, they would just start running around like maniacs. Yeah. Like seriously, jumping up around like nuts, jumping on the fridge and on the tables and all kinds of stuff. And of course, it was right when I was going to go to sleep. When I was awake, they were quiet. You know, that was well, they still have Max. It was Boo and Max. Those were the cats, and they still have Max. Boo got really really sick, and they had to put him down. But yeah, they would run around at like, you know, like 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm laying on the couch and they're going nuts.
Did it sound like this?
They would knock stuff over. You know what I mean? I'm laying there and I'm like, come on. And my parents are, you know, in the bedroom with the door closed. And they're sound asleep. And here I am in the living room with a couple of maniac cats running around.
Knocking stuff over.
Yeah. Jumping on tables. I guess, yeah. And then other than that, you know, they would just be laying there all very, very quiet. It's just when I wanted to go to sleep, that was time for them to go insane. All right. Let's take a quick break here. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. And by the way, we've got our... our nightly Carson Classic. You know, you can watch Johnny Carson show every night on Antenna TV, and we're going to play back Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Johnny Carson does a Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. So that's coming up. 312-981-7200 for the Team Hawkbird phone line. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio. It's a Tuesday, right? Tuesday morning. 312-981-7200 is the Team Hochberg phone line. We would love to hear from you. So this is a true story, right, Tom?
Correct.
Of a fake Burger King in Pittsburgh. Now, we're not talking about the mascot. We're actually talking about the restaurant. Every city has its own fast food urban legend. All of Toronto still mourns the now-closed Parkdale McDonald's, a location so famously weird that the guy who brought in a full desktop computer to watch porn was actually considered one of the better customers. You know, when I worked at McDonald's, this was a long time ago, it was in the, like early 80s when I worked at McDonald's. You know, you could get just free refills on coffee. And we would have the same customers come in every day. They were all senior citizens. And they would just sit in the booth for hours and just drink free coffee, which, you know, was their right. But it was the same people. It was like, so we did have a lot of return customers. They would just sit. They would sit in the booth and drink coffee all day long.
The only place where coffee refill should be free is at a diner.
Why do you say that?
I'm not a huge fan of free refills.
What? Why?
I think, well, people wonder why folks drink so much soda, drink so much pop.
Yeah.
You know?
Because you get free refills?
You get free refills. Uh-huh. If you had to pay for every pop. Like, when my cousin Jason came here to these United States. I was just a kid. He was just a kid. He came here. We went to, like, I don't know, Applebee's or something. My dad had an unhealthy obsession with Applebee's. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. But we go to the Applebee's, sitting down. You know, he orders. He says, Mom, can I get a Coke? I said, yeah, sure. You can get a Coke. Gets his Coke, and he has his Coke. Waiter comes back around, says, hey, can I get a refill for you, fella? And he looks at him like he just offered him the keys to the Wonka factory.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, he had literally never heard of a free refill before. And he's like, he looks at my dad. He's like, Uncle Ken, can I get a, can I have another one? He's like, yeah, you have as many as you want. He drank 8 Cokes. 8. He had to be physically stopped from getting another one.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he was off the wall for literally the rest of the day.
When I was a coffee drinker, I used to go to, I lived in Andersonville for many years, and there used to be a diner in Andersonville called Augie's. And it was a great diner. I used to go there pretty much every day. And the owner's name was oddly Augie.
You're kidding me.
Yeah. And it's a pretty legendary for people who lived at any time in Andersonville, especially in the 90s, you knew Augie's. That's where you ate breakfast. My buddy Jim used to live in Andersonville as well, and we would meet because we both work nights. So we would meet and have breakfast like at noon or something over at Augie's and pretty much every day. And at that time, Jim was a smoker and you could smoke in Augie's. And so we would just smoke cigarettes and drink coffee. And I can't tell you the number of free refills I had at Augie's, how much coffee I consumed at Augie's.
An unhealthy amount, I would.
I would imagine so, yeah. That was the one thing when I quit smoking. It wasn't pleasant when I quit smoking, but the only thing that whenever I had a cup of coffee, I would want a cigarette. So I quit caffeine the same day. Because I tried to quit earlier. There were several times when I tried to quit smoking. But every time I drank a cup of coffee, I was like, oh, God, I got to have a cigarette.
It's that Pavlovian response.
Yeah. So that's why I quit caffeine. I quit caffeine and cigarettes on the same day. It's like, can't have one without the other. Of course, you can, but.
But why would you?
But it's just, yeah. I mean, there's a reason why Paul Thomas Anderson's first film was called Coffee and Cigarettes. Because they go together very well. So, neither of them are very good for you either. So this guy, this is the Parkdale McDonald's is in Toronto. In Long Beach, they swear Sweet Dixie Chicken, which was notoriously exposed for buying Popeye's fried chicken, smuggling into the back door, and then reselling it at a slightly higher price. That's pretty funny. Sweet Dixie Chicken. You know, you can tell Popeye's chicken. You know what I mean? Like, you go into Sweet Dixie's chicken, and you get a piece of chicken, and you bite into it, you go, wait a minute, this is Popeye's. Because Popeye's has a very distinctive flavor. And it's really good. Popeye's chicken is good. Smuggling it to sell it at a higher price, and nobody in Chamblee, Georgia, can order Domino's without remembering the time a deranged gunman named Kenneth Noyd. No. His last name is Noyd. Kenneth Noyd took 2 employees hostage, believing the chain's nationwide Avoid the Noyd advertising campaign was aimed at him specifically. Wow. But there's a new champion on the scene. A story so hilariously insane that you simply would not believe it unless we added that it took place in Pittsburgh. Everything is true in Pittsburgh, the only town where children's stories about a guy with no face wandering around at night turned out to literally be a guy with no face who enjoyed late night walks. His name was Raymond, and he was reportedly a lovely man. But with no face? This particular tale was sinking into the mists of local folklore until it was recently highlighted by Twitter, a Twitter user who has something of specialty in bizarre Pittsburgh legends. We're talking, of course, about the Southside Fake Burger King. The first thing to note is that this particular Burger King was never exactly going to win awards. The drive-through facility can only be described as a terrifying murder tunnel. Which online reviews include phrases like, quote, some shady guy charged me a dollar to use the bathroom. Quote, a homeless guy stole another homeless guy's shoes. And if you ever said to yourself, hey, I want to eat lunch in a dirty bus station, this place is for you. There was a McDonald's a couple of miles away that was selling Happy Meal toys stuffed full of heroin, and it still got better reviews. But around the start of 2014, things went even further downhill to the point where people started asking, is this even a real Burger King at all? The epic saga began when customers noticed that their food didn't seem to taste like Burger King. That's usually a compliment. But if you specifically chose to go to Burger King, it's because you want a special experience to having your taste buds beaten with a used sock full of nickels. What's with the Burger King hate? Every time we talk about Burger King, there's people hate Burger. I love Burger King.
It's not what it used to be, man.
Gee, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I haven't eaten there in a long time. I haven't eaten a lot of fast food in a long time. The situation deteriorated as food began to be served in plain brown paper bags without the famous BK logo. Fries came in Dixie cups. Drinks were served in plain styrofoam cups. The burgers were wrapped in tin foil or sandwich paper. Some expert soda connoisseurs claimed that the Coke machine appeared to be dispensing Pepsi. Rumors spread that employees had been sighted loading up on burger buns at the nearby Giant Eagle supermarket.
Have you ever had? Did you ever have to do that at McDonald's? Never ran out of product?
Well, you'd call another McDonald's, another...
Oh, they'd get it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was working at that grilled cheese place, straight up, at least, I don't know, once every 2 weeks, we'd have to run over to the Whole Foods and get tomatoes or something.
Yeah. No, I know I know it's happened in the past. At McDonald's, though, like, because I worked at the McDonald's at Irving and Major, which is right just west of Central on Irving, because it's right by my high school, because I went to high school at Luther North. So that's the one I worked at. We would always get our product from Cicero. From the McDonald's on Cicero. That was the one that we would... They would send an employee over, like, if we needed a couple of racks of buns. You know, you would call your... So that's how, if you ran out of product, you would just go to another McDonald's.
That's your bun guy.
Yeah. So buns were the things that we ran out the most of.
Sure.
So, all right. We got more of this crazy Burger King story. And that leads me to ask this question. What's the worst place you ever eat? Have you ever eaten? Because this sounds like a nightmare, this Burger King. Or maybe you were like on a road trip and you stopped off and you had maybe the worst food you ever had in one of the most disgusting places you've ever been. If you have nightmare food stories, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And the epic story of this insane Burger King will continue. And we want to hear from you. Nightmare food stories, 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So we continue with this nightmare story about this Burger King. And it's in Pittsburgh. What's the worst place that you've ever eaten at? Maybe one of the most disgusting places you've ever, like if you were on the road or something and you stopped off and went, what the hell is this place? You ever go to a really terrible place to eat?
McDonald's, Gary, Indiana.
McDonald's in Gary, Indiana.
Mm-hmm. 9 years old, saw a guy shooting heroin in the stall.
Oh, God.
The drive that my mom wanted to, I was with like my Cub Scouts or whatever.
Yeah.
Driving back from somewhere in Indiana. Heading towards Chicago. So we wound up going through Gary. And one of the kids had to use the bathroom. And the nearest place was a McDonald's in Gary, Indiana. Pull off to the McDonald's. And just, you know, stop. My mom's like, well, I'm not leaving you guys in the car. Stay with me. So we all go into this McDonald's. And she sent me in with the other boy, Cub Scout, whatever. She's like, make sure he's cool. Like, make sure no one talks to him or anything like that. I'm going to be standing right here. If anything happens, you run out. You tell me. It's like, okay. We go in there. And kid opens the stall. There's a dude. Full on belt on the arm.
Oh,
just
man.
Shooting skag.
Jeez.
I'll never forget that. That kid. And immediately he's like, yeah, I don't have to go anymore. And we just ran out. And we're like, let's go. Let's get in the car, please. We want to go.
I'm told by my parent, by my mom, that when I was a kid, when I was a little kid, if we went into a restaurant, I would immediately go into the bathroom. And if the bathroom wasn't clean, I'd say, we're not eating here.
Ooh, look at you.
I don't remember this at all. I have no recollection of this at all. But this is what my mom insists that I used to do that. True. That I was a little kid. I'd go into the bathroom, and if the bathroom was dirty, I'm like, I'm not eating here.
Wow.
Yeah. That has changed as I've become
a... Sure. I think, you know, you have to loosen your restrictions a little bit.
I don't really remember it. Honestly.
Yeah, if you were little enough, you would never remember it.
But that's it seems odd considering, you know.
I think you missed a calling as a health inspector, maybe.
Oh yeah.
You would have been pretty good at it. Oh, slap a little grade on the front.
Yeah, no, that's definitely changed over the years considering my hygiene now. So I haven't shaved since February, I look like a lunatic. I mean, it's nuts.
I mean, we could probably get you, you know, you could be the Unabomber.
I look like a nut with this with this beard. I'm not sure why I haven't shaved. I know I could. I have, you know, I have a razor at home and shaving cream and a trimmer. But I don't know why. Now it's like I'm just going to see how long I can go.
Before you get stopped on the street, they're like, all right, sir.
Well, that and also because, you know, when your mustache gets in your mouth, you know, when it goes over your lip and it starts to go into your mouth and that affects your eating.
Yeah, you can't have that.
It's really annoying. And I'm at that point right now. All right. So back to this nightmare Burger King where they would run out loading up on burger buns at a nearby Giant Eagle. They were serving stuff in brown paper bags. So how could a Burger King run out of Burger King products? As it turned out, corporate had revoked the location's franchise months ago, apparently due to repeated food quality complaints. The company had hoped to reopen the location with a new owner, but the Southsiders simply struck out on their own, continuing to operate as a rogue Burger King outside the law. Yes, the Southside BK crew carried on with their mission even as supplies and instructions from headquarters stopped coming. At some point, the name printed on receipts was quietly changed to Southside Burgers. But the Burger King signs, uniforms, and posters remained, meaning customers had no idea that they were eating at a pirate restaurant. This is nuts. But rumors grew as employees started claiming that they were out of most of the menu items, while sauce packets were replaced with generic ketchup squirted into plastic ice cream cups. There were unconfirmed reports of marauding staff members stealing promotional materials from other Burger King locations. As a general rule, if your boss ever announces he's the burger warlord and upgrades you to fry cook from fry cook to raider, it's probably a good... It's a good time to look for new job opportunities. Burger warlord? As supplies ran low, things began to get dark. One customer described arriving to find the front door barricaded. Following the hastily scrawled, please use side entrance, no E on the end of entrance. He made his way inside, discovered blacked-out LCD screens and grease-stained menu taped to the counter. An order of chicken nuggets and fries produced steak-cut Costco fries and elementary school nuggets. When he asked for a packet of sauce, the manager emerged from the back bearing a highball glass filled with Sweet Baby Ray's barbecue sauce. And at this point, Hello Darkness, my old friend, suddenly emerged from the store radio, because sometimes life is just perfect like that. That's nuts. I mean, that's got to take the cake for the worst, right? I mean, come on. Here's Trucker Rich. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, Nick, how you doing tonight?
All right.
There was a Burger King I know of that if you went up and ordered four Whoppers, two fries, and a large Coke, you'd get a bag of pot with it. And that worked until an undercover cop went through, and that's the order he had because he was taking it back to the guys at the station.
That was the specific order that you had to order? That was what you had to order to get the pot?
Yeah, because they were selling pot out of the drive-thru.
Right.
So, yeah, they got busted. And then we were over in Egypt and got back into our base at Alexandria, Egypt. And the mess hall was closed, so we wandered down to the beach to the Pizza Hut. It was actually just a hut on the beach that made pizzas. And Buddy went ahead of me, and he ordered, the guy says, American cheese, which was mozzarella or goat cheese. And Buddy said, mozzarella. And he says, what else do you have for toppings? And the guy said, in broken English, you know, we've got ground beef. No sausage, you know, because it's kind of a taboo thing there for their religion and stuff. And he says, I'll have the ground beef, please. And he reached under the counter and pulled out a can with a picture of a cow on it and proceeded to open it up. And it looked, you know, like a can of dog food. And it was like, you know what? Nah, I'm not really that hungry tonight.
Yeah.
I got a bag of potato chips back in my duffel bag.
Yeah.
That'll do.
Yeah, that'll do. Oh, yeah. My God. All right. Okay, Rich. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Yep. Have a good one.
Yep. But the changes weren't all for the bad. Freed from the shackles of the burger tyrant, the heroic rebels were free to get creative with the menu. Most notably, you could apparently now order a Whopper with as many patties as you wanted. The measly little triple Whopper was left behind, fit only for cruel orphanages during a gruel shortage. As great cathedrals of patties beckoned on the horizon, admittedly, staff members were reportedly completely unwilling to pick up the slices of cheese littering the floor, but sometimes true freedom means a bunch of floor cheese. We're pretty sure that they were just days away from serving hard liquor and hosting an underground fight club before those nerds on Reddit had to spoil everything. This is just unbelievable. I mean, this is just unbelievable. In February of 2014, a thread about the burger imposter was posted on a Pittsburgh subreddit, prompting the city's WPXI news team to send a reporter on the scene. On arrival, she was treated to the traditional Burger King greeting and agitated, ununiformed security guard yelling, "Please get off our property." Some Redditors later claimed the security guard, quote-unquote, was also moonlighting as a well-known local panhandler. But either way, it was the worst restaurant publicity since the entire Toby Keith's I Love This Bar and Grill chain turned out to be a front for a New York mobster to rip off mall developers. I never heard that story. With the news team poking around outside, the employees rapidly clawed down the giant Burger King sign on the building, although the BK uniforms remain, probably because nobody's so worried about the trademark infringement that they're prepared to spontaneously launch the world's first all-nude fast food joint. An assistant manager eventually gave a statement insisting that they were in the process of transitioning to a new name. This process had apparently been ongoing since at least November, but you can't rush these things. Full disclosure. Cracked itself, that's where this story came from, had undergone several lawsuit-induced renames, formerly known as Mab Magazine. The WPXI story went semi-viral, and more stuff happened after that. We've got more here. This story is crazy. What's the worst place you've ever eaten? I mean, I don't know if you can top this Burger King in Pittsburgh, but we can give it a shot. 312-981-7200. And we'll get your phone calls here on the Team Hochberg phone line. Where's the what's the most disgusting place you've ever eaten? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4, as we are every weekday morning, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. At 4 o'clock, we'll head over to Bradley Place, the TV side of WGN, get some news and information from those great folks. And then at 5 o'clock, the one and only, Bob Surratt has your morning drive. We do comedy from Johnny Carson. Johnny Carson Show you can watch on Antenna TV every night. And so we play a little comedy from the Johnny Carson Show every morning at 2:30. And we're going to go and check out Johnny Carson's Mr. Rogers Neighborhood. So that should be funny already. We are talking about this insane Burger King in Pittsburgh. And the details of this story just keep getting weirder and weirder and crazier and crazier. And obviously, it's a terrible place to even try to eat. And that's what we're talking about. You ever have to go to a really terrible place to eat, like a terrible fast food place or some place that was kind of you found out but was filthy, worst like food experience? 312-981-7200. Here's Linda on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Good morning, Nick. How are you today?
All right. What's up?
Well, there was like six of us, and we went to Cracker Barrel. And I've never been there before. Anyway, our waitress came, and she was talking, so it was her first day. She brought us a plate of biscuits, and they were very good, the biscuits were. But anyway, she took our order, and she left. Well, we were sitting by a big window, and we happened to see her. She went across the parking lot and got on the bus. She quit. So we had to start all over again with another waitress. We'd already sat there for a half an hour, then we had to sit there and wait again. Then when we got our food, my green beans, I think they must have cooked them for a month.
Yeah.
And the potatoes was running across the plate.
Yeah.
You know, and I told the ones that was with us we should have just ordered a plate of biscuits and left.
Yeah, geez, that's hilarious though. She quit, left and got on a bus.
Yeah, we watched her go.
That's hilarious.
She couldn't figure out what she was doing, and next thing you know, she jumps on the bus and away she goes.
That is really funny.
And we had to start all over again.
Yeah.
But I'll never go there again.
Yeah. Okay, Linda. Thanks.
All right, honey. Bye.
Bye. I've always had a good experience at Cracker Barrel.
Well, that's because you've never had a waitress just up and quit.
Well, she said the food was bad. I like Cracker Barrel very much. I've always had a good experience there.
Cracker Barrel is good.
Yeah.
It is good. But I feel like I could get a better biscuits and gravy elsewhere.
Well, yeah. I would imagine. But yeah, I enjoyed the Cracker Barrel. So, but yeah, that's a funny story. She just quits, up and quits. We're talking about like food, nightmare food situations, and we continue to talk about this ridiculous Burger King in Pittsburgh. The WPXI story went semi-viral since fake restaurant locations are surprisingly rare in America. In this area, the U.S. sadly lags behind Iran, where you can cheerfully grab a Whopper at MashDonald's, Boof Burger, Kabuki Fried Chicken, Subways, Chic Shack, or Pizza Hut. No Baskin Robbins, though, since Baskin Robbins is apparently one American chain to command the full backing of the Islamic Republic's legal authorities.
Wow.
That's pretty funny, but just Baskin Robbins. I like that fake name, though. Baskin Robbins.
Why don't you go to the bar and get yourself a John Daniels?
Back in the U.S., the publicity forced the real Burger King to finally swing into action, releasing a statement declaring that location was once Burger King and would surely be Burger King again, but was not currently in a state of Burger King. What? You know, a situation is confusing when your press release has to be proofread by a team of quantum physicists. After what we can only assume were some frantic backroom legal shenanigans, Burger King successfully retook the South Side from its erstwhile pretender. The restaurant subsequently underwent renovation and reopened under a new franchise owner. Sadly, news reports on the reopening mentioned that the new team of employees was also brought in, meaning the ragtag band of castaways who kept the burger flame alit through months in the wilderness were simply kicked to the curb. Rumor is that they retreated to the Allegheny Mountains, where they continue to serve flame-broiled patties to fortified woodland glades, emerging to raid Burger King convoys of supplies and honey mustard sauce with cheap napkins. Come on. The location itself is now indistinguishable from any other Burger King. They didn't even add a little nod to its outlaw period, like letting you order a Ziploc bag full of stolen KFC mayo packets. But there's something special about the South Side that seems to ooze in through every attempt at corporate blandness. So you may be pleased to learn that the same South Side Burger King was most recently in the news when it was accused of serving an unsuspected father and his four-year-old son a cheeseburger entirely covered in ants. Okay. Jeez. Joe is on WGN. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right.
Yeah, I was calling in because I've got a place for you, bad food that I've had.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back about 15 years ago. I ordered lunch actually to take back to my job. And I ordered from a Mexican place, El Gallo Tampascio. They're in Oak Lawn, right around 111th and Cicero. The place is always just packed, you know. A lot of people would go in there. So I started going there, eating there. The food seemed like it was pretty good. You know, so one day I went in there and I ordered a steak burrito and a steak tostada. And when the guy was making the tostada, I saw he was, like, looking at it, and he started, like, picking something out of there, you know. So I didn't know what he was doing. That happened once before because I would order no sour cream on there, and sometimes they would put sour cream on.
Yeah.
And if they would catch themselves, they'd, like, pick that out. But I figured, oh, that must be what he's doing. So he calls for his boss and comes over, and he was, you know, saying something to her about something in there, and she just kind of signaled, like, serve it. So I said, oh, he must have just picked out the sour cream. So I get it home, open it up. I ate the burrito first, and that seemed okay. Then I get into the tostada, open it up, and green bugs came out of this thing.
Oh.
All over my desk at work.
Oh.
Easily 20, 30 bugs, you know, and they look like the kind of bugs that would be like in salad or something, like in lettuce maybe.
Oh, you know? God.
So I'm thinking they were probably in the actual burrito, but since the burrito is hot, you know, they probably died in there because
oh.
They were the color of the lettuce. So I had already ate the burrito, you know, so I just went and threw that up right away. First we killed all the bugs on my desk, you know, and then I went and threw up, you know, the food from the
right.
Burrito, you know, and then I called there and the lady said, oh, you know, just if you want, come on in, we'll make another tostada.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no way. I am not going back there. And I never went back there, and they're still open.
Wow.
You know, so what he was picking out must have been some bugs.
Yeah.
You know,
That's pretty gross, Joe.
That's the worst of all time.
Yeah,
I
would guess. Okay, thanks, Joe.
Yep. Okay, all take right. care, Nick.
Oh, my God.
That's just next level.
Oh. 312-981-7200 to the Team Hawkbird phone line. I don't know if anybody's going to be able to top that one as far as, like, bad food experiences go. All right. It's Nick DiGiulio on 720 WGN. Call us up, 312-981-7200. Hello, Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. If you want to call us on the Team Hawkbird phone line at 312-981-7200. We're talking about really bad food experiences that you've had. I don't know if you can compare what is happening or what was happening in that Pittsburgh Burger King that we described, which is insane. But I know we've all had some experiences that were less than stellar, let's say, at fast food places or restaurants in general. 312-981-7200. on the Team Hochberg phone line. Let's go to Robert on WGN. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Nick. How you doing, man?
All right. What's up?
Well, you used to work in a bar a lot, so you know those pull-down towel machines in the bathroom?
Yes.
There used to be, I don't know if it's still there, there was a great place we used to get burritos and steak fajitas, you know, in the restaurant. Get Grand and Austin. You familiar with that place?
I used to live at Grand near Austin.
So you know where that is, right?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay, so we used to go in there all the time, get those, you know, chicken fajitas, you know, they flame them at the table for you, the whole bit, right? So we used to get steak burritos to go all the time. So just a normal night, middle of winter, go in there, place my order, and I go to the bathroom to take a leak and wash my hands. And as I'm drying them, I use the pull-down towel machine.
Right.
And I yank it real hard, and 100 roaches come flying out of there.
Oh.
So I walk back to the order counter, and I go, cancel the burrito order. And the guy goes, why? I go into the bathroom. You'll find out for yourself.
Yeah, that's not good. I ate there a bunch of times. Thanks, Robert. I appreciate that.
And here's another one for you. How about this? Remember Lynn's Garden Restaurant?
No.
It's where the buses turn around. I'm walking into that. There used to be a Cock Robin across the street.
Okay.
And they went out this. Well, anyway, I used to be a dishwasher there, you know, for like 6 months to pay the rent, you know. So I go in there and, you know, I'm working there. And, No hot water in either of the bathrooms, which is state law. So he was paying me below minimum, you know. But he was paying me $5.83 an hour. Minimum wage was $6 an hour back then. This is like late 80s. So I said, I'm going to fix this guy because I knew I was going to quit because I wasn't, you know. It was brutal. It was 60-hour
week. Right.
You know, below minimum, 60 hours and all that. So I called the labor board. I said, mail me all the forms, you know, for, you know, not paying scale and stuff. So they sent in a bunch of inspectors in there, you know, like 3-4 days later. And I was in my stall, in the, you know, behind the bar doing my dishes. And they all came in there, and they all had the badges and stuff like that. And they walked up, and they said, lock the front door. They said, who's the boss here? I said, you'll find him in the kitchen. I'm just a dishwasher. So they went in to go, you know, in the back where the son and the owner were working. And they said, lock the front door, and we're going to go over this place with a fine-tooth comb. Who are you? Well, we're the health inspectors. And we got the labor board guys with us. So when they went in the back where the kitchen was, where all the cooks were cooking, they found, you know, I mean, restaurants are famous for having bugs and stuff because, you know, it goes with the territory.
Right.
You know, roaches and, you know, it's just like the place you told me that you ate at. You expect it a little bit, just like a bar. You're going to get a roach across the bar once in a while. But these guys, what they found in that kitchen underneath the locks and stuff was insane. You know, like dead rats, dead mice, live mice running around.
Right.
And they didn't know, you know, my boss, I didn't advertise. I'm not stupid enough to advertise that I had them come in.
Yeah.
But the next day I walked in there and I said, now you're going to pay me back what you owe me, or I'm going to close this restaurant. And he said, Joe goes, well, what do you think I owe you? I said, I know what you owe me. You owe me $1.50, you know, 100 and a half. And he pulled out his wallet. He pulled out 350s. And I said, now I quit. You can find a new dishwasher. I quit on a Friday. So they had a nice weekend shift for him.
Right.
No dishwasher. And then I said, oh, by the way, they're going to close this place by next week. So So the next week I walked in there, closed.
Oh, there you go, Robert. All right. Thank you for the story. We appreciate it. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's Mark on WGN. Hey, Mark.
Yeah. Oh, man, I tell you what, when I was a kid, lived in the little town of Beaver Dam, Kentucky, worked at a parts store. Every day for months at lunchtime, run down to the corner to the Beaver Dam Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And they were known. They was their what they hung their hat on, that they had the best pies in Kentucky.
All right.
And they had them all. They had apple pie, cherry pie, chocolate pie, all of them on the back bar, one right after the other. Just big, beautiful looking pies. And I was in there one day, and the place was packed for dinner. I'm sitting at the bar, and I look up, and all of a sudden, here come cockroaches crawling out of a crack in the back bar there, size of puppies. And they fell down into that chocolate pie, one right after the other, crawled out of that, crawled into the apple pie, crawled out of that, crawled into the cherry pie, all the way back and forth. And I'm sitting there, check, please. I'll be right pass on the pie.
Yeah, I think you're going to pass on the pie. There's no question about it. Seems to be a roach theme here. Here's Chris on WGN. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Nick. What's going on, man?
Hey.
I got two quick ones. My buddy and I went to a brand new Mexican restaurant. It was open for a week. We went in there, and three guys are in there. There's one on the phone, one taking the orders, one cooking. So right away, we ordered two burritos, and that's it. And as the guy writes it down, he takes the paper, turns around, and gives it to the cook. What he does, I picked up the menu, and three roaches ran out from underneath it that were the size of horses. I don't know who ran faster, the roaches or us, to get the hell out of there.
Jeez.
I went to a pizza place one time, and you could see in the kitchen. My buddy's a food delivery guy. He says, you can always tell a good restaurant if the kitchen's clean.
Yeah.
And this guy's smoking a cigarette, and he's stirring this big pot of sauce.
Oh, no.
And he's got an ash probably 2 inches long. So I turned to my buddy. I'm like, dude, check this dude out. The ash was gone, and he's still stirring the soup.
Oh, jeez.
I looked at him. I was like, yeah, dude, no, not for me.
We're leaving. Yeah. All right. All right.
Great show, Nick. Okay. This is awesome.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. Take care.
Bye, brother.
That reminds me of, you've seen 16 Candles, right?
Unfortunately, yes.
There's a scene where the grandmother has, they're cooking, and she's like stirring something, and there's a giant, she's making breakfast, and she's got one of those, the longest ash that you could possibly have. Well,
that's just horrendous. I can't believe, you know, even working in the business as recently as I did, you know, usually the cooks tend to still be smokers. You know, it's a high stress environment.
Yeah.
But like, I cannot imagine, you know, they take it outside now. It's against the law. You can't smoke in a kitchen. And even they would be like, never. They're very clean. They're very kind of like.
You go outside intense. If you can have a cigarette.
Yeah. You go outside out back in the alley. I cannot for the life of me picture even someone smoking a cigarette inside a kitchen.
Yeah.
It just does not even register to me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I bartended for, you know, several years, but the places that I bartended at, they weren't filthy. They weren't dirty at all. So they kept, you know, they kept everything up. They cleaned everything.
Sure, yeah.
And so it was never like that. But I've been to bars that needed a cleaning, like a good cleaning. This reminds me of like watching Bar Rescue, or like
John Taffer.
Yeah, with Taffer, or there's the Gordon Ramsay show where he goes in and
Kitchen Nightmares. Yeah,
yeah, Kitchen Nightmares.
That's a classic.
Yeah.
John Taffer.
Look at all this grease.
I've eaten this.
Yeah.
It's frozen.
Yeah. Taffer. I've had Taffer on the show.
Did he talk about the butt suction or whatever? What do they call
what?
It?
What?
You know that thing he always builds into the bars?
Oh, that. Yeah.
The butt touching zone or whatever.
Yeah. That zone where you're going to pass by really close. And
Yeah.
I don't remember if that came up. It was a long time ago when I had him on. Long time. So, anyway.
God.
All right. I think we could all use a laugh after listening to some of these health issues that people are having in restaurants. So, Johnny Carson, the Johnny Carson Show, you can hear it. You can also watch it on Antenna TV every night. So every morning at 2:30, we like to play back some classic Carson, whether it be like some stand-up or a sketch or something like that. Well, now we're going to take a visit to Mr. Rogers' neighborhood after this. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Skyline studio here until 4. We're going to be talking about things most of us think are the same, but they aren't. And much more. 312-981-7200 is the Team Hochberg phone line number. And we're going to get back to the show here. But we always, at 2:30 every morning, weekday morning, we always like to play back some classic stuff from the Johnny Carson Show. You can watch the Johnny Carson Show every night on Antenna TV. And we like to play some stuff, whether it be some stand-up or a sketch or something like that. Just some comedy at 2:30 in the morning here. So from the classic Carson, we're going to go to Johnny Carson's version of the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, a wonderful day to be neighborly. Won't you be my neighbor? Hi, neighbor. Are you having a nice day? Well, I am. Yes, I certainly am. Do you know you're the most wonderful person in the whole world? That's right. And I like you. Yes. And I hope you love me, too. It's just a beautiful day to be alive, isn't it? Well, boys and girls, why don't we go over and talk to Mr. Fish? Here's your breakfast, Mr. Fish. Do you know what I think, boys and girls? I think Mr. Fish has bought the farm. Maybe he's just sleeping. Up and at him, Mr. Fish. Nope, he's dead, all right. That's what happens when you forget to feed Mr. Fish like Mr. Rogers did. By the way, boys and girls, there may be one or two of you out there who haven't yet joined the Mr. Rogers Pal for Life Club. For only $12, you get a membership card and a certificate stating, "Somebody loves me." Remember, you can't be my pal until you've sent your $12 and have an official membership card. Remember, if you don't send it, then nobody will ever love you. And your dog will die. Do you know what these are, boys and girls? That's right. These are baby shoes. And you know what? Mr. Rogers was once a baby a long, long time ago. And do you know how babies suddenly appear in the world where before there weren't any around? Well, I know, and I'll show you. This is a mommy doll and a daddy doll. And they love each other very, very much. So what they do... at night, they get under the covers. And 9 months later, mommy doll looks like this. So daddy doll takes mommy doll to the hospital. They go into the hospital, and the very next day, out comes mommy doll and her new baby doll. Then the daddy doll comes out to take them home. Whoops. Looks like daddy doll has made a new friend, Miss Nurse Doll. And they'd better be careful, because 9 months later, Miss Nurse Doll might look like this. And then it's all over for Daddy. Because that's when Mommy Doll comes in, calls in Mr. Lawyer Doll, who does to Daddy Doll what Daddy Doll did to Mommy Doll 9 months earlier. Only Mr. Lawyer Doll does it better, but that's fine. Well, boys and girls, why don't we go to the kitchen for a nice, cold glass of milk? Would you like a pretend glass of milk? You know what this needs is some syrup. Last night, Mr. Rogers went to a party, and he's not feeling so good today. Can you say bombed? Mr. Rogers... See, milk comes from the cow, boys and girls, and this comes from a paper bag. That was an eye-opener. Can you say eye-opener? Would you like a pretend slug? Now, why don't we go over and see how our Mr. Plant is doing? There's Mr. Plant. Mr. Plant was sent to me by a pal in a far-off land called Colombia. Oh, that could be a pretend policeman. Well, I don't know about you boys and girls, but I'm hungry. Mm-mm. How about some donuts? Now, let Mr. Rogers show you how we make some donuts. First, you take the dough, and you need plenty of dough. I need plenty of dough because the ex-Mrs. Rogers needs plenty of dough, and that's why Mr. Rogers has been here every day for 24 years. Now, here's what we have. We have our vat of very hot grease, and we have to be very careful because it's 400 degrees. Now, we take our little donuts, and we drop them in the hot vat. Do you hear them frying? Be very careful. Boys and girls, if you take a camera close-up, you can actually see the donuts. Boys and girls, Mr. Rogers has a pretend hurt, and he has to excuse himself to go to the pretend closet. Say sterile. You know, I'm glad you could spend this time with me on my last show, but it isn't goodbye forever. Who knows, you may be in your bedroom one night, look up, and I'll be there outside the window. You see, this is my last show in this neighborhood, and I'm moving to a new neighborhood where I've made a new friend. This is what we call a grown-up. Can you say hooker? I love everybody, especially you, because you're the most important person in my whole life. And right now I'm taking you to a pretend motel. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, a wonderful day to be neighborly. Won't you be my neighbor?
Oh, man. That's funny. Can you say hooker?
Can you say bombed?
Oh, Johnny. Johnny Carson, you can watch him on Antenna TV every night, and you can hear highlights from classic Johnny Carson shows. Every morning on the show here at 2:30, and we'll do it again tomorrow. So we're going to be talking about things most of us think are the same but aren't. What does that actually mean, Dom?
So it's kind of like the difference between poisonous and venomous.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. We'll jump right into that. 312-981-7200. That's the Team Huckberg phone line number. If you want to get in here, we're going to talk about things that we thought were the same but really aren't. I still can't get over that fake Burger King in Pittsburgh. That story was nuts, Tom.
Life is a weird thing sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the details in that story were insane.
Listen, I spend a lot of my day scouring the weird world to find what's going on out there, just to bring it to you.
Well, it's fun to talk about on the show. You know, we like to talk about weird, strange, funny things on this show. So, all right, we're going to jump into things that we thought were the same but actually are not. 312-981-7200 for the Team Hochberg phone line. Hello, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio. We're 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here until 4 o'clock every weekday, night into morning, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, right here on 720 WGN. So this is from Reader's Digest, correct? Good old Reader's Digest. How long has Reader's Digest been around?
A million years.
We used to get it. I don't know if my parents still do get Reader's Digest. They used to. We used to subscribe to it. Good old Reader's Digest. Didn't they have jokes in the back of Reader's Digest?
Still do.
That's probably why, if my parents still get it, that's probably why.
Your dad
My dad needs more material.
He's copping Reader's Digest jokes.
I bought him a bunch of joke books.
Sure.
You know, I always, like, for his birthday or for Christmas, he always gets at least one joke book. Some of them aren't very good. Like, he looks through them and he's like, you know, there's not a lot of funny stuff in this one, man. I'm like, I didn't write it. yes. So, the idea here is things that most of us think are the same, but they actually aren't. It happens to the best of us. We've all been there. Things we've been saying and thinking for years finally and suddenly are brought to our attention. Some words don't actually mean the same thing, even if you've heard them used interchangeably. Maybe you're talking to a group of work friends, and when suddenly someone looks at you strangely. Whatever the case may be, we know that assumptions about things being that the same, which turn out not to be the same, happen when we least expect it. Words can be tricky, but these small, intricate differences are actually important to know. Now, you mentioned poisonous and venomous. And there is a difference. Venomous applies to animals that bite or sting, injecting toxins. Anything that's poisonous unloads toxins when you eat it, according to the encyclopedia. So saying a snake is poisonous is almost saying incorrect as a snake bite, which releases toxins. One exception is the garter snake, which has a small or harmless bite but is toxic to eat, per the encyclopedia. This grammar rule is very literally life or death, but you can probably ignore the other strict grammar rules to live to tell the tale. So poisonous and venomous. I may have been guilty of mixing those two up as well.
Isn't there also a difference between electric shock and electrocution? To get a shock is...
Well, I think electrocution kills you.
Yeah, you have
You can get a shock and still live.
Yeah, if you're electrocuted, that's like a method of... That's a cause of death, is electrocution.
Exactly.
But then again, I'm not an expert on electrocution.
No. You ever see the movie Shocker?
Who's in that?
It's a Wes Craven movie.
Shocker. No.
It's about a guy who gets electrocuted and comes back as a spirit and jumps into people's bodies and stuff. came out the same year as The Hidden. And The Hidden is also very similar to that. Like, you know, a thing going into assuming different bodies. They came out around the same time when I was like, what is this? What's this trend? If I remember correctly, shocker, the main character, I don't know why this sticks with me, because the movie's like 30 years old, but Horace Pinker, I believe, is the main it's the main character's name. The killer who comes back after being electrocuted. Horace Pinker, I think. All right, things that we think are the same but actually aren't. Colleges and universities. University is an older word generally referring to institutions with both undergraduate and graduate or professional programs per dictionary.com. Some states in the United States require that a university offers graduate degrees in at least three fields. Colleges emphasize undergraduate learning and might not have graduate degrees at all, although some still offer both programs. Another common difference between the two is that colleges tend to be smaller than universities. The biggest difference between the two might be mostly cultural. Over time, university became more prestigious than college, which is why some schools are changing their names. To make things even more confusing, some universities have colleges within them for different areas of undergraduate study. I like when these two-bit colleges that, you know, advertise on daytime TV or universities, they just throw those two words around.
Well, you know what started to scare me? Was I started seeing Loyola University commercials. I was like, oh, God. Oh, no. It's happening. But
is Loyola University, it's not a college?
No, it's a university because it has undergraduate and graduate programs, and it consists of more, isn't it more than four kind of schools? So like a school of communication, school of education, it has at least four of those. So it's Loyola University of Chicago.
That's the full name, right?
But there's also one in Marymount. There's one in New Orleans as well.
There's one in New Orleans?
Yeah, Loyola New Orleans.
Well, I didn't know that. Wow. So college and universities, different. They're not the same. Macaroons and macarons. One letter in spelling these sweet treats is a small difference between two almost completely different desserts. French macarons are meringue-based sandwich cookies with either a ganache, jam, or buttercream filling. They are notoriously tricky to make, but macaroons aren't. Macaroons have shredded coconut as the main ingredient and only take about 30 minutes or less to make. I like macaroons. You a fan of coconut?
No, not really.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I enjoy coconut.
Not to steal a line, but it's not the taste, but the consistency.
Oh, okay.
I actually really like an Almond Joy or a Mounds. I don't mind that.
So you don't like
I don't like the flakes.
The coconut flakes.
Anything that's really flaky coconut.
But like the middle of a Mounds is fine.
Yeah, if it's kind of like that, it's almost like a, I don't know, like a creamier consistency.
Yeah, yeah, no,
you know,
I got
a little
you.
Bit more,
I got you.
More of a filling. That's all right.
I can understand having issues with texture and consistency in some foods. I mean, you know my thing about couscous.
The rice so nice they named it twice.
I can't do the couscous. The consistency makes me like gag.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it's not that. I mean, it's pasta. I should like it. You know, but I just can't. I can't do it. There's nothing. It's not like I don't like the food part of it. I just can't. You know, there should be no reason to dislike couscous. It's just pasta. Here's Manny on WGN. Go ahead, Manny.
Yeah, things that are taken out of context or things that aren't what they are when you say them. Years ago, I I was invited to a wedding shower, but when I got there, nobody was taking a shower.
Oh, boy.
And one more, people were talking about bothersome things that they've seen in restaurants, like insects. You know what the most intelligent insect in the world is?
I do not.
A spider. You know why?
Oh, here we go. Why?
They have websites.
They have websites. All right, man. Thank you.
Good night. Have a good evening.
Somebody drank their Henny Youngman juice this morning.
I will say, as a kid, I was super confused by the term baby shower. I was like, what do? They wash it? Like, I don't get it.
How did that? I wonder what the origin of that, of using that word for your shower. Bridal shower, you know, or your baby shower.
Baby shower, yeah.
What are they? Could you shower with gifts? Is that what it is?
You know, I bet that's it. I'll do a little half-ass internet research.
I think that might be where it comes from, because you get showered with gifts.
God, I never thought of that.
Yeah. Well, I've had a couple of wedding showers in the past.
Yeah. Not looking for a third?
No.
You don't want the trilogy?
No.
All right.
I want the Cuisinart back. Speaking of showers. Yeah. She got the Cuisinart.
Yeah, was that an arbitration?
Look, I did all the cooking. The last wife that I had, I did all the cooking.
The least she could have done is
just give me the Cuisinart,
ma'am. God,
that was my favorite gift that we got at any shower.
The Cuisinart.
Have you ever Cuisinart?
I don't. I'm not. I'm waiting for the wedding shower.
Okay, there you go. Just make sure you get it in arbitration.
I hope.
All right. Let's take a break. Things that are that we think are the same but really aren't is what we're talking about. 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio is here. That's me. We're live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here every night into the morning, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. Keeping you informed, keeping you company, and getting you through this. We'll get through it together. So, 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you on the Team Hochberg phone line. We were talking about things that we thought were the same but really aren't, like colleges and universities and macaroons and macaroons. So, 312-981-7200. Here's Elizabeth on WGN. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Yes. Many people think misconception and misapprehension are the same, and they're not. Misconception is the wrong idea. Misapprehension means fear. Also, when you're the opposite of flammable, it's not inflammable. That means the same thing. It's non-flammable.
Right. Yep, that's
Let's
right.
Hope people learn that.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Elizabeth.
You're welcome.
Take
Good
care.
Night.
Yeah.
That's the difference between you and not getting set on fire.
Yeah, I mean, inflammable means the same thing as flammable. I mean, she's right. Non-flammable.
Yeah. Unflammable?
Could that
work?
I don't know if that works.
My English teacher is probably wanting to beat the crap out of me right now.
Screaming at the phone, at the radio right now. Oh, man. I can barely communicate with the English language. I don't, you know. All right. How about robberies and burglaries? Not the same. A robbery is some person-to-person interaction and theft with force, intimidation, or coercion, according to the Law Office of Nancy King. Burglary, however, only requires intent to steal. It does not require actually stealing property or a person interaction. Meanwhile, theft simply means you stole without interacting with anyone. Okay. So if you theft means that you simply that you stole without interacting with anyone. That's what theft is? I think I've misused that one too.
Mm-hmm. You know, my dad always really hated the term burglarized.
Burglarized?
Yeah, burglarized.
Mm-hmm.
He insisted, much like he insisted that Puerto Rico was a state. He insisted that the term was burgled.
Well, I've heard that.
Burgled?
Yes, I have.
But he really had a thing against the word burglarized.
No, burgled. I've heard burgled.
Is burgled Man, correct?
I think well, I'll tell you what. Your dad was British, right?
Yes.
I think that's...
And so in the UK, it's burgled.
Burgled.
I've been burgled.
Yeah, no, I think that's a UK thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I've heard it. I've heard it before. And I think I've only heard it like in British movies or British TV. So I'm almost... We'd have to look that up, burgled. But it's legit. It's a legit term.
Yeah.
No, so your dad true. Didn't
British.
Make it up. Yeah.
Burgle. To,
yeah.
to burgle.
Yeah, no, that's
I'm sorry. It just sounds silly to me.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I thought, as soon as I heard it, I thought, okay, that's British. And that's the only time I've ever heard it is in
British TV
yeah,
shows.
British,
and stuff
or,
like that.
Or movies, something like that.
Burgled.
Yeah.
You know, he also used to say that in America, there isn't a noun that can't be verbed.
Well, what does he mean by that? What did he mean by that?
So he said that he felt that in America, Americans tend to turn nouns into verbs, like I jeeped over the mountain or something like that.
I jeeped over the, are you talking about in a Jeep?
Yeah. So I jeeped
like
it.
Driving a Jeep?
Yeah. I jeeped it.
What does that mean? So like so your dad maintained that we verbed all nouns in this?
Not all of them, but we tend to.
Has anybody ever said I jeeped that mountain?
I don't know, maybe Jeep enthusiasts?
I don't think so.
I always found it curious though. What would that mean to verb a noun? And also verb is a noun.
Well,
it got verbed.
It was sometimes sometimes they change over. Like Google.
Yeah, I Googled it.
Yeah,
that's a noun
it's
that
a
gets
verb
verbed.
Now.
Yeah, there isn't a noun that can be verbed.
Okay.
I Lysoled it. That sort of thing. That's true.
I don't think I've ever said I Lysoled it. I sprayed Lysol on it, or you know that kind of thing. Do they say that about this about the studio?
When I Lysoled it.
Is that what the engineers say when they clean the studio here?
Yeah, before you get in, I'm like, hey,
you got a Lysol. You got a Lysol the studio.
He's like, listen, I Lysoled it, all right. I definitely Lysoled it. I Febrezed it.
Yeah, Febrezed is a, yep, that's
there
a verb.
There isn't a noun that can't be verbed.
Well, I said that. I've said Febreze it. I've actually used that term. I actually have. I'm trying to think of nouns that I've used as verbs. There are a lot of them.
Or if you put a microphone on someone, they're mic'd up.
Yeah.
They're microphoned.
Mic'd up. I wouldn't say they're microphoned.
Right. But it's still, you're taking a noun, microphone, and you're turning it into a verb. Mic'd.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Let's get you mic'd up. The English language is weird.
I would describe it as a trash fire at times.
Sometimes.
But it's my trash fire, and that's what I speak.
Well, yeah. How about it? You're trucking.
Yeah, trucking.
Yeah.
See? I told you.
You could blame R. Crumb for that. Keep on trucking. All right, let's take a break, and we've got things that most of us think are the same, but they actually aren't. And if you want to jump in here on the Team Hochberg phone line, we'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Things that are we think are the same, but really aren't. Yeah. What about words that mean the same thing? These eyes, that sounds nice. These peepers, not so much. These peepers. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're talking about things that most of us think are the same, but they really aren't. We're live in the Skyline studio. And phone lines are open. We would love to hear from you on the Team Hochburn phone line, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Okay, how about climate and weather? Not the same. Weather accounts for the day-to-day temperature, precipitation, and humidity in a specific area, according to the National Snow and Ice Data Center. They just have data centers for everything, don't they?
Yeah.
The National Snow and Ice Data Center. Climate, however, is a long-term average weather trend. We should have just called up Skilling.
You know, I honestly, I truly believe that if we called Skilling at, what, 3:19 in the morning to talk about the difference between climate and weather...
Oh, we'd have him on until 10.
He'd be more than happy to do it.
Yeah.
He'd be more than happy to do it. He's just that good of a guy.
So the weather might be 50 degrees rainy and humid for New York in April, but the climate might usually be warmer and wetter. Oh. Oh. Yeah, weather and climate, not the same thing. You know, I love Tom Skilling. He's the best.
Who doesn't? He's the king of Chicago.
Yeah, he's the best. I told you, I was in a box with him at the United Center for a Hawks game. And so was Bobby Hull. And so was Tony Esposito. And Stosh was in there too. So you got the three ambassador legendary Hawks, and Skilling got a bigger round of applause.
As well he should. As well he
he's
should.
He's a rock star, dude. You got three Hawk legends. You know?
Bobby Hull doesn't tell me if I need a jacket today. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
And tell me if I need an umbrella. Or what the barometer says.
Yeah.
I don't even know what a barometer measures.
Baroms? I was lucky enough to have been in a suite with the ambassadors a lot of times. I was very, very, very lucky. The Blackhawks organization over the years has been very, very kind to me. Ever since we started broadcasting the Hawks here years ago, I got a pretty good relationship with Jay Blanc, and they've been very, very kind to me. And so I was lucky enough to have been in a suite a few times with the ambassadors and other, you know, ex-Hawks, Dennis Savard and all those guys.
Sure.
So one night, because this was when I was a drinking man, this was back when I was a drinking man, and you know the suites are loaded with beer, and you don't have you don't have to pay for the beer.
Ton of Bud Lights.
So I remember I went to the refrigerator in the suite during a timeout. I went to the refrigerator in the suite, and I walked out. I had a beer. I walked out, and I'm walking past Bobby Hull, and Bobby Hull goes, "Hey, how many beers do you drink during a game?" And I said, "I don't know, 4 or 5." He goes, "A period."
Getting chapped by Bobby Hull.
Well, Bobby Hull has been known to have a couple. He's thrown back a few.
Well, you know, he's a totally awesome hockey player. You know, those guys.
Listen, he's a legend. He's a legend. He's also a great guy. He's also a really nice guy. How many beers you drink during a game? brother. All right, turtles and tortoises, not the same thing. I think you knew that, didn't you?
I think I knew that.
The tortoise and the hare could have another title if Aesop knew other animal distinctions. The turtle is an umbrella term for turtles, tortoises, and terrapins, according to National Geographic. Oh, so it covers everything. Covers everything. Tortoises are turtles that strictly live on land and are not made for water. Some turtles, however, are aquatic. An easy way to tell the difference between the two is to look at their feet, as tortoise feet resemble elephant feet, while turtles, and specifically sea turtles, have webbed feet or true flippers, per Nat Geo. Yeah, I've seen turtles with flippers. You ever see turtles with flippers?
I haven't. Or maybe I have. I think you probably have. I guess I just never noticed. Like, we used to get a lot of those little, I think they're called painted turtles, because they've got the colors on the side of their head. They're like kind of like orange stripes of, almost. But we used to get quite a few of those.
Where?
In Crystal Lake.
Oh, just like,
well, because I lived in an area that there were like a few ponds around and everything like that. So we used to get, I think, sandhill cranes.
Sandhill cranes?
Yeah, just a species of crane, or like you get a heron every once in a while.
Did you get any Fraser cranes?
Only weeknights at 7. Was he on NBC?
He was on NBC on Thursdays.
Oh my God. Fraser cranes.
I love that show.
That was great.
Especially Mahoney. I love John Mahoney on that show.
Well, yeah,
I love John Mahoney on everything.
I mean, he's the best. I'm incarcerated, Lloyd.
One of the greatest lines in film history.
yeah, Frasier. Not a great show for like a 8-year-old kid to watch, though.
But that and Cheers both were consistently great shows. You know, I mean, that show, Cheers still holds up.
Sure.
And so does Frasier.
Mm-hmm.
And that character, I mean, is that the longest anybody has ever played? I think that's the longest anybody has ever played one character. I think Kelsey Grammer holds the record for playing Frasier, that character, the longest.
I don't know. What about Richard Belzer as Detective Munch?
As Munch?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty long run. Is he on SUV?
SVU?
Yeah. the other show is where they solve crimes when they drive around in a big truck.
Yeah. Oh my God. He recently ended his tenure.
Right, because it's Mariska Hargitay and Ice-T, right?
I think those are the only two original cast members
from
left.
SUV.
Yeah, sure. Whatever you say, man. But he's the only television character in history.
To be on three different shows? Was Munch on... Because he was on Homicide. He started out on Homicide.
He started out on Homicide and then went to SVU. He's the only character to jump franchises like that. He was in a completely different television show, and they just kept the same actor, same character. Everything about him was exactly the same. He just was in Law & Order now. So,
did you ever watch Homicide?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Oh, that show. Andre Braugher on that show?
It's unbelievable.
Andre Braugher? Come on.
Unbelievable.
Frank Pendleton? Please.
Mm-hmm.
Did he ever win an Emmy for that? He had to have been not. He had to have at least been nominated, right?
Yeah. I would say nominated. I don't think he ever won.
You know what show I loved that lasted for like two seasons, maybe? Did you ever watch the Ray Romano show, Men of a Certain Age?
I didn't watch it because I was not a man of a certain
age. Well, I was. It was right in my wheelhouse.
TNT?
Yep. I watched it every week. Bakula, Andre Braugher, Ray Romano. What a great show that was. A great show. And I was right around that age, too. Like, I think when that show was on, I was in my early 40s. Or I was at least 40 when it started. And I just, did I love that show. Great Britain and the United Kingdom. Well, who doesn't know that?
Some people have some trouble with it.
Really?
Yeah, because it is a weird kind of diagram if you're talking about Great Britain, the United Kingdom, Britain, and the British Isles.
Yeah.
Those are all referring to very different things that all concern a single geographic area.
All right. Across the pond is either the United Kingdom or Great Britain, depending on who's talking. Although foreigners might mix up these words, they are not interchangeable. According to the encyclopedia, Great Britain is a geographic and political term referring to the island of Britain, including Wales, Scotland, England, as well as some other small islands off the coast. The United Kingdom is a political term, an independent country including all of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. So while Great Britain is part of the United Kingdom is not part of Great Britain. Yeah.
But the British Isles does include Ireland.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, because it's just referring to the islands.
Yeah. Okay. The flu and colds. There's a difference between the flu and colds. Colds and cases of the flu have a lot of similarities, which is why some people confuse the two terms, but they are both respiratory infections from viruses with some lousy symptoms. Some of the cold symptoms are sore throat, runny nose, and maybe a nasal drip. Flu symptoms differ since the nose is sometimes congested. There's always fever and extreme exhaustion. Unlike the flu, however, colds and cold symptoms don't last as long as the flu and flu symptoms, and it could develop into serious complications. All right. Some of these things are the same. You know, I was just noticing, what's on your hat?
Rooster.
So you just have a rooster on your hat?
Yes.
Is there a reason?
Not really.
Just bought a hat with a rooster on it.
Yeah, I got it in Texas. Got it in Austin. I guess you could say it's me paying tribute to, if you're a Matthew McConaughey aficionado,
it's his brother.
Yeah, his brother, Rooster. So this is my tribute to his brother, Rooster.
I got a brother named Rooster. He's crazy. He always tells stories on talk shows about his brother.
About Rooster.
Actually, Rooster appeared on a talk show with him.
Good old Rooster.
Gotta take care of Rooster.
Oh, my God.
All right. We got more things that we think are the same, but they aren't. 312-981-7200. And the Team Hochberg phone line is open. And we'd love to hear from you. All right. Good morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN live in the Skyline studio. And we are here until 4, as we are every weeknight into day, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. We are talking about things that we think are the same but actually aren't the same. So how about streets, roads, and avenues? Streets, roads, and avenues. These terms aren't just fun ways to change up the language of street names. Roads are typically thoroughways connecting two points, but streets are public roads with buildings on both sides, Mental Floss reports. While streets are roads, roads aren't streets. All right, let's get even more confused. Then there are avenues, which run the opposite way of roads, either north, south, or east-west, depending on where you live. If you live on a boulevard or a lane, there are also differences for those subsections of streets and roads, too. I always sometimes forget like whether a certain street in Chicago is, whether it's an avenue or whether it's a road. I know Irving Park Road.
Sure.
I should know that.
One would hope.
Addison is a street. I'm trying to think of streets that I lived on. Wilson. Wilson's an avenue.
Wilson Avenue, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Lawrence is an avenue.
Lawrence Avenue. Sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I'm just second guessing.
No, it's definitely Wilson Avenue. I know that for sure.
Yeah, Wilson Avenue.
I want to say it's Lawrence Avenue as well.
Kimball's a street, correct?
God.
Ah. Now I'm trying to remember. Milwaukee's an avenue, right? Milwaukee Avenue, yes. Milwaukee Avenue.
All right. What was an avenue again? What's the definition of an avenue?
there are avenues which run the opposite way of roads, either north, south, or east, west, depending on where you live. Does that clear it up for you?
No, not even a little bit. Then what's a drive?
That's a good question.
Lakeshore Drive. Is that just a whole subset?
Yeah, I guess.
Why do you drive on a parkway?
Do you live on a driveway? Do you live on a street?
Yes.
You live on a street.
I live on a street.
Our side,
I live on those streets.
Are you,
man?
Yeah.
From School of Hard Knocks.
Right. Streets of Fire. Yeah. So I'm even more confused than I was before we even started this conversation.
Someone posits that in Chicago, streets go east and west, and avenues go north and south.
Is that right? Streets go, what did they say, north and south?
So streets go east and west.
East and west.
And avenues go north and south.
That might be, I think that might be correct.
If that's what, yeah.
I think that might be correct.
Because that's holding up so, but Montrose Avenue.
Wait a minute.
Montrose Avenue goes east and west. It crosses with Kimball Avenue.
They say, they're saying that streets go east and west.
Streets in Chicago, streets go east and west, and avenues go north and south. That doesn't hold up.
Belmont's an avenue, and it goes east and west.
And then you've got Kimball and Lawrence. Two avenues.
They cross. Right at the L stop. we're probably confusing everybody who's waking up right now. Or at least I'm easily confused, so. Streets, roads, avenues, then you got boulevard, you got lane. And they don't explain the differences between a boulevard or a lane, if you live on a boulevard or a lane. So streets are roads, but roads aren't streets. Let's all be confused together this morning. All right. We have people calling in on this. About avenues and roads and streets and stuff, on which one is which. You can call the Team Hochberg phone line. Phone lines are lighting up here. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Let's see. Here is Tracy on WGN. Hey, Tracy.
What's up, Nick?
Hey.
So, you trying to figure out how streets and stuff go, huh?
Yeah, well, we're seeing the difference between streets, roads, avenues, and boulevards and lanes and stuff.
Yeah, okay. Like I said, avenues goes north and south, and what's it called, goes east and west.
Okay, you're saying roads go east and west, and avenues go north and south?
Yeah.
Well, Lawrence is an avenue, and it goes east and west.
Lawrence Avenue's Wilson Avenue.
Yeah.
You're right about that.
They both go east and west. Yeah, they do.
It's confusing.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm thoroughly confused by the whole system of roads and avenues and streets in the city.
Because I used to live on Wilson Avenue.
I did, too. I lived on Wilson for a few years.
Wilson and what?
Wilson and St. Louis.
Oh, I stayed on Wilson and Sheridan.
Oh, yeah, okay. So you were much further east than I was.
Yeah.
All right.
But, man, that is confusing.
Yeah, we'll try and figure it out. All right, thanks, Tracy.
All right, you have a good one.
All right, take care, buddy. Yeah, all right. I don't know if there's a strict rule? What is Clybourne? Because that's one of the streets that runs on an angle. So Milwaukee is an avenue that runs on an angle, obviously. Clybourne runs on an angle, too. I think Clybourne is a street. I don't remember. Is Clybourne a street? Do we know? Yeah, I think Clybourne is a street. So if you want to jump in here, 312-981-7200. That's the Team Hochberg phone line. the difference between streets, roads, and avenues is what we're talking about. And we're also talking about things that most of us think are the same, but they're not. Whole wheat and whole grain foods. Products that are whole wheat are also whole grain, but not all whole grain products are whole wheat, as wheat is a type of grain. A food is whole grain if it uses the entire grain kernel, including the outer bran shell and the germ. That's what makes it that's what makes it whole grain. So whole wheat and whole grain are not the same.
Ah, all right.
312-981-7200 is the number if you would like to join us on this very confusing conversation that we're having about avenues and roads and whole wheat. All right. Direct and nonstop flights, not the same. Direct and nonstop flights. The important difference between direct and nonstop flights is that nonstop flights go from the first destination to the last. A direct flight, on the other hand, is an older term from days when flights made intermediate stops at airports along the path or route of the plane, sometimes for more fuel and sometimes without making passengers leave the plane, according to Travel and Leisure. These direct flights are far and few between these days, thanks to more fuel-efficient jets. All right? That's kind of a tricky one right there.
Nonstop and direct.
Right. Nonstop is also a Liam Neeson movie.
Not a bad one either. It's all right.
It's just one of the many movies where he stops someone on a form of transportation.
Yeah.
That was his thing. That was his thing
nonstop
for a while.
Nonstop. The commuter.
The commuter. That was on a train. I guess that's it. Now I'm thinking back. I remember really liking Nonstop.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a good one.
Yeah, I like to watch Liam Neeson beat the crap out of people. I remember when Taken came out, Tom. You know, that was supposed to go directly to video. Taken. And, you know, I remember reading about it or seeing a trailer for it, and I'm like, wait a minute, Schindler is going to be punching people in the face? This is ridiculous.
He's got a list, and he's checking it twice.
Then I saw Taken, and I was like, he's the greatest action star of all time. How many throat punches does he give in Taken?
You know.
Countless.
So many, and it's still, I could still take more.
I love that movie. The sequel's not so much, especially the third one. Third one's terrible. Yeah. Second one's okay, but the first Taken, I love that movie. Here's Doc on WGN. Hey, Doc.
Hey, you know, Liam has a particular set of skills.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
Hey, I know a couple of terms that people misuse all the time. Grilling and barbecuing.
Oh, sure.
And grilling is technically considered cooking directly above the coals with the lid off, and barbecuing is moving the air around the food with the lid closed.
Right. Right.
I got another word for you that originally, before there was the word decelerate, the word accelerate is any change in direction or velocity. So initially in physics, accelerate meant to speed up, slow down, or change direction.
Hmm.
And that got to be a little too confusing.
Yeah, that
and
seems...
hey, pet peeve of mine, two words that aren't words, orientate and commentate.
Oh, yes.
If you're going to an orientation, someone is going to orient you, and a commentator comments.
Right. Not commentate.
And another noun that became a verb, catfishing.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. That's because of the internet, yeah.
And another term that's overused is endangered. Mm-hmm. I went down to Galveston and saw this turtle rescue place, and they had both loggerhead turtles, which are endangered, and Ridley turtles, which are threatened.
Oh,
okay. So endangered is the worst category, and right below that is threatened.
Okay. All right, Doc.
I'll take worthless trivia for 800, Alex. There you go.
You got it. All right, Doc. Thanks, buddy. Take care. All right, let's do some weather, and we'll come back and we'll wrap this up. We've got more things that some people think are the same, but they're actually not. All right. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, we head over to Bradley Place, the TV side of WGN, and we get an hour's worth of news and information from those great people. And then the one and only Bob Surratt is your morning drive starting at 5 right here on 720 WGN. So we've been talking about things that some of us think are the same, but they're not. Like motels and hotels.
What about Holiday Inns?
What do you mean, inns? Just the word inns?
No, I mean motel, hotel, Holiday Inn. Like Rapper's Delight. I tried.
Oh, I
see. I gave it a shot.
Okay.
The Henny Youngman juice has run out.
Yeah, I was not in the same mind frame that you were in on that one. there are more differences between hotels and motels than there are than their first letters. Both types of lodging have the same essential purpose of housing travelers, but plenty sets them apart, too. Hotels, a term with French roots, offer lodging, meals, entertainment, and other services to travelers. Motels are a more recent American lodging option meant for one- or two-night stops for road travelers. That's why hotels provide more amenities as guests stay longer. Even something as simple as a lobby is a bonus, as motels typically offer access to rooms from the parking lot. That's just some of the main differences between motels and hotels. Yeah, motel. The idea that you can actually get into a room from the outside, that's clearly a motel.
Yeah.
That's absolutely a motel.
Like a night's inn.
Yeah, like Bates Motel. You go inside the room from the outside.
And then you die.
And then you get stabbed in the shower.
That's the Bates Motel promise.
Yeah. That's a bonus.
It's shower murder.
Yeah. We offer room service and shower murders. All-wheel and four-wheel drive. Yes, most cars have four wheels, but that doesn't mean four-wheel drive is the same as all-wheel drive. The vehicles with four-wheel drive are usually trucks or SUVs meant for off-road driving. These wheels work by sending power to all four wheels with traction when traction is necessary. All-wheel drive vehicles have power going to all the wheels all the time. Although it sounds quite similar, different. The difference between all-wheel and four-wheel drive is that the car transitions into all-wheel drive without the help of the driver. Of course, there are also subcategories. So, all-wheel drive is not four-wheel drive, Tom. Did you know that? You did.
I did know that.
Yard sales and estate sales. Yard sales, garage sales, tag sales, and rummage sales are all pretty much identical. There is, however, a big difference between yard-type sales and an estate sale. The homeowner runs a yard sale, but outside paid people or companies run the estate sale, according to Stacy Sporn, real estate broker in New York. And more advertising is another difference between estate sales and yard sales. Yeah, yard sales are more official, right? And it's usually an estate sale is usually after someone passes away.
Generally speaking, yeah.
Cement and concrete. Although people use cement and concrete interchangeably, they are different things. In fact, cement is the binding ingredient in concrete, according to the Portland Cement Association. Come on, there's a cement association?
Someone's got to look over this stuff.
The Portland Cement Association?
You got the folks over in the UK, the barber or the, you know, beauticians association, founded in 1942. What was the name of this again? I'll find out when it was founded.
What?
The Cement Association?
The Portland Cement Association. It's very important to have a cement association. Yeah, the ingredients are different as well. So,
Portland Cement Association.
Yeah.
Take a shot in the dark. When was it founded?
1902.
Based in?
Portland.
Skokie, Illinois.
What?
Yeah.
Why is it called the Portland Cement Association if it's in Skokie?
That is a great Great question.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. Over on, so if you want to take a visit over on 5420 Old Orchard Road.
Road. That's a road.
Yeah. 117 years old.
Okay.
Portland Cement Association.
I just think it's weird. It's called Portland and it's in Skokie. How about this? Grocery stores and supermarkets, not the same. The products in grocery stores are also in supermarkets, but the opposite isn't necessarily true. The difference in products and store size are the main reasons supermarkets and grocery stores aren't the same thing. Supermarkets usually have a wider assortment of products going beyond food, but grocery stores stock a handful of household items at most, according to Jenna Coleman, a consumer behavior analyst in the grocery sector and founder of Particular Pantry. Grocery stores, and I never refer to them as supermarkets. I always refer to it as a grocery store. I never say I'm going to the... Well, I say I'm going to Jewel.
Going to the Jewels?
Yeah. There's Leslie on WGN. Go ahead, Leslie.
Hey, Tom and I know one that you probably don't. The word gasoline and petrol.
Yeah.
Yeah, Vaseline and pet, because it's petrol.
Petrol is gas.
Or petroleum jelly?
No, petrol is gasoline.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't know it, that it is.
Yeah, it's gasoline. Yeah, and that's how they refer to it
in the UK
across the pond.
Not gas, petrol.
Yep,
petrol.
And then finally, chocolate cake and devil's food cake are not the same. I think I like devil's food cake more than chocolate cake. All right, well there you go. Things that we thought were the same, but they're really not. Yeah. Hey, tomorrow on the show, Terry White returns to talk about his new album, and Mark Rudiger from the UFO Center for UFO Studies is going to be on the show.